Leclerc yesterday into the slow corner. Rossi's gone last. Rossi's at the back of the field. He's had a run-up somewhere. I'm sure he's behind. And Caroline comes out. So Valentino Rossi's on a run-on. And Rossi in the first sector has lost 4 seconds. And he has got all the work to do. Valentino Rossi's Indianapolis Grand Prix for 2011 has not been an honourable one. In his 16th year of Grand Prix motorcycle racing, not been a belt to have it.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 288 for Wednesday, the 31st of August, 2011. My name's Martin Darlington. I'm in the UK where the time is 06, God, it's early. And with me across in California is Jules Cisek. Hello, Jules, and welcome back from Indy.
Hey, yes, I am back from Indy. I returned on Monday morning, bleary-eyed. I slept pretty much all day. I'm still actually kind of recovering.
Can you get jet lag within your own country?
You can, but it's not jet lag. It's more like staying out too late lag.
You nearly said party lag there, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And change, just in case your wife listens to this. Okay, well, we have got a bunch on. Go on, tell us what you've got coming up that you got from Indy.
Okay, well, we're going to have the... On Thursday, when I got there, I was really worried about making it. And an incredible, huge shout out to Scott Jones, the photographer extraordinaire, Moto Matters guy, because he picked me up at the airport and he was waiting for me as I got off the plane. And that was a lifesaver because I really wanted to see Elena Myers, the AMA female sensation here in the States, get to ride the Suzuki, Bautista Suzuki, and we got there basically just in time for me to see that. So that was awesome because without Scott, there's no way I would be able to make it there.
I met him at Silverstone. He's an absolute diamond, isn't he?
Yes, yes. Very.
Yeah, him and David were very...
very chill, underspoken guy. They make a good team because they're both very, very modest guys. And extremely talented, both of them. So that's, we'll have a little bit of a chat with her. And then I spent all of FP3 with my friend Andrea Oliari. We've been friends for a long time, actually, through Liam Schubert, since the beginning, really. And he's been with Pramac for a couple of years, then I was been with working with Scott Redding, and that was fun because during that session Scott Redding ended up being on top, so we got to hear kind of the enthusiasm of the team as the session was progressing towards the end. So I'm not quite sure at this moment while we're doing this call exactly what's going to be in there, because I still need to edit that bit, but it'll just be little bits and pieces as the session went on. It was very interesting being in there for the entire session, watching what happens. You know, there's moments of excitement and moments of just kind of lulls where they're just hanging out, watching the timing screens, and then flurry of activity as the bikes start coming in. Both him and Callio did well that session. So, and then in the evening, on Saturday, I sat down with Toby Moody at his hotel, had a couple beers, and we chatted for a long time about pretty much everything on the sun. And you know, Toby is amazing, so that was really fun. And then last bit that we'll have is a chat that I had with Shalina Morita, who's another local racer who was there on the XR1200s, and she earlier at Laguna rode the ECRP electric bike in the electric race there. So she's been on quite a few different machines because she normally races Super Sport and 600s AMA. And we didn't get to catch her in Laguna Seca, so I wanted to catch up with her here, and that was cool. So that's what we'll have on the plane. We'll jump into those as we chat. But before that, let's do some listener feedback.
Sure. Well, we had a very interesting email from Ross Robertson, who was at Indy, and he spoke to Greg White, who is the Speed Motorcycle Pit Reporter. Jules had to tell me that. I didn't know who Greg White was. And he'd said that Dorna wants to move...
Well, much more than just a pit reporter. He's kind of like the expert, and he's extremely chummy with a lot of the racers, so he has a lot of inside.
Just like their Matt Roberts sort of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, he said that Greg had told Ross that Dorna wants to move the Indy race to the weekend after Laguna Seca, which I think a lot of people have looked at and said, hang on, why do we go to America, come away, then go back again?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense, but that would clash with the Brickyard 400, which is, I believe, a NASCAR race. So big, fat, sweaty blokes crashing into each other in massive corners cars, the Dukes of Hazzard things. And that attracts more fans and therefore more dollars. So Indy don't want to do that. So Austin and Laguna, Austin, Texas, the new track, and Laguna Seca, we know, are in from 2013. So it's possible that they'll squeeze Indy in again in its usual slot next year, or it won't happen.
Right, right. That back-to-back rumor, by the way, was going around for quite a few days there on site. And because MCN was also reporting it, that it was being talked about. And, you know, the reasoning why the races were separated in the past was because they were worried that they were going to oversaturate the market. But the reality is that America is a lot bigger than most of the European countries where they normally worry about that kind of stuff. Or like Spain races, you want to separate those out so you don't oversaturate the market. Don't have that issue here. It's East Coast.
In Spain, you can get people saying, we'll either go to this one or that one. But yeah, in a country that size, geographically and population-wise, it's not really an issue, I wouldn't have thought.
No. Although it's amazing how many people I see that are just... You start recognizing people at these rounds, you know? It's like...
Yeah.
I don't even know who they are, but I recognize their faces. But yes, so there was, you know, as Jim likes to point out, IMS never releases actual attendance numbers, but Dorna does, and Dorna estimated 64,000 on race weekend and 130,000 over the entire weekend, which is not too shabby, but as many people have pointed out, including yourself, it makes the place look pretty empty because that place is you know, built to hold 250,000 seated, you know, plus another 150,000 in the infield. So we're talking about a 400,000 person, arena with 60,000.
And you myself and Gonzalo have been having a bit of a conversation on the show notes by putting notes in. And I mean, the example I just used to you pre-show there was there's a football team in Scotland called Queen of the South. They were a tiny little team, but for some archaic reason, I don't know if they still do, and I'm sure a Scottish listener would be able to put us straight, they did use Hampden Park as their home ground, and that's the Scottish National Football Stadium, so it's like a 70,000 all-seater. But they used to get 500 to 700 fans each week, so you just get this, like the very front row would have a few people sat in it. And that's it. And that was a little bit the feeling I got, particularly the aerial shots where you just got these empty stands with, you know, half a dozen fans dotted around. And it just makes it look a bit empty and sad.
Yeah, that's true.
And the one that hit me was Cadwell Park for this weekend's BSB meet had 50,000. So it's only 10,000 less. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, but Laguna, on the other hand, had 50,000 and it was completely packed. It's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, the thing that would have made back to back rounds at Indian Laguna interesting is that there'll be more possibility of bringing the support classes to Laguna, which would have been really, really cool. Although then you have to figure out what to do with the AMA round there, and you know there's a limited number of loud.
Sorry, that's me.
Huh?
Of course, it's because it's noise.
Yeah, noise thing,
isn't it? Laguna. So do we know that when the, because the contract's not been renewed, because the future plan I would imagine is to have Austin, Texas back to back with Laguna. Will we get the, because I presume we'll get the support classes at Austin, so will we get them at Laguna then, or is it still going to be a problem?
I don't know. See, my thing is, so I've been talking to a bunch of people about that at whenever I get a chance, you know, to you know, be in this, in the, talking to the other journalists and stuff, you know, I just feel like there are a couple of those events which are considered the noisy events, which are actually not going to be over the noise limit, like the Wine Country Classic car meets. You know, those I think could be called outside of those six, you know, special events, and therefore AMA could get their own round. I don't know. I mean, it's up to the guys at Laguna. I mean, if it was my choice, I'd say add a seventh, you know?
Yeah.
You know? We'll do whatever it takes.
Time will tell. Last week we were talking about Cadwell and the mountain, and we were gutted that Hopper wasn't going to be there. And we were talking about the bikes going over the mountain. We both sort of chuckled and said, I wonder what they have to do to the bikes to get them cope with it. So Les Pearson, who's on Twitter at 276 Motorsport, who's one of John Hopkins' team, one of his team mechanics, he was tweeting. So I tweeted him and asked him, and I said, you know, what suspension changes do you need to do? And he just said, nothing special for the mountain. It's only a small part and not very important. Barn corner is more important. So they can clearly cope. And I was surprised, and I thought, well, there you go. That shows what I know about setup. But clearly, yeah, the suspension is firm and absorbent enough for that not to be a huge issue. Although, God, they don't half hit hard. I mean, you remember when we were talking about this when Jim was at the TT, the incredible on-bike rear-looking cameras on some of the TT bikes going over the normal roads, and the work that suspension's doing. And I thought, well, normally a racetrack isn't like that at all, but no, clearly they don't do that much. Or they do, and Les was keeping it under his hat.
Yeah, I don't know. At the TT, it's an entire lap has potholes and all sorts of bumps and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure Caldwell Park isn't like the TT in terms of the road surface, and it's just that, you know. And not all the guys bounce their bikes like that, you know. Some of them don't leave the ground because they
choose not to. Because they're great big scared cats.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not necessarily the fastest way around either. It's just very fun to
watch. It shouldn't be. Yeah. I mean, skiers always say that despite you'd think you're reducing friction, the more time they spend in the air, the slower they go. So
right. They don't have to on the ground. That's why.
We also had a very good, everyone I'm sure will remember our recent discussions about Dovizioso versus Simoncelli for next year's. Well, it's starting to look like it's not going to be an HRC seat, right, as in the Repsol team. It'll be a factory bike. And Alan Fleming sent us a point that somehow we'd let go under the radar a bit. And he said, unfortunately, I think the prevailing issue is not the riders' respective performances in 2011, where Dovi has clearly outpaced Simoncelli. It's the fact that Dovi's manager had such a big fight in 2010 with HRC to keep Dovi on the Repsol bike, because remember, he had this deal that if he was in the top five at, I think it was Brno, then he'd get a factory ride for the next year. And
then they signed Stoner.
And then they had to go to three bikes, and Honda doesn't like being pushed around. So Alan's point I'm afraid Dov is out of Repsol at 2012, possibly off a factory RCV, no matter what his performance is. Whereas Simoncelli needs to provide Grassini with results so the team has the leverage to get a factory bike for 2012. Dovi needs results to impress another team enough for them to hire him, or at least that's how I read the situation. Spot on, Alan. I think, yeah, when you look back, I think HRC will probably be in a, okay, you made us give you the pike this year.
Good luck next year.
Yeah, you made your bed, you lie in it.
Yeah.
And we'll come on to that. We've got a little bit of speculation about what might happen with various teams and riders next year. But we'll do the tip roundup first. And you had an email from Justin.
Right. Justin didn't leave us his last name, and I didn't recognize the email address, unfortunately. But Justin wrote in and said that the RSV4 and the BMW both have the option of buying the bike without traction control. The electronic aid systems are available options, which cost extra. They're not standard on these bikes, although it is hard to find the BMW without TC or ABS. The Aprilia is APRC, and the BMW has DCT and ABS as options. Originally, the RSV4 was not offered with traction control. So that goes to my argument for that bit.
and Gonzalez added, "Told you."
Thanks, Gonz.
Yeah. Okay. Little bits of roundups on news. The will they, won't they debate over Motegi continues. Valentino Rossi has reinforced his objections. He's added the team aren't too happy either, at which point everybody started tweeting Alex Briggs and Davide Brivio and the other members of his team saying, really, really? Rossi says you're scared, are you? And I've not seen any answers to that yet. And Rossi said he needs to talk to Jorge and Craig Casey before a decision, as their opinions is important. Sick. That's how he put it, bless him. But HRC have confirmed that changing Suzuka is an absolute non-starter, definitely won't happen. Casey, we now know that his initial refusal was due to the news that he knew and we didn't at that stage, that he's going to be a dad. And he's now softened his stance, and Jorge also seems to have started to say, well, it's still a bit unsure. But Casey made a very good point that this was reported in GP Week. He said, it's not so much that we've had this report and, you know, the report says, yes, it's fine. But we are hearing that the official Japanese reports were actually rubbish, to the point that a lot of the locals started getting disometers and Geiger counters and making their own readings. And they've had to go back. He said, it's not that we don't think the information says it's safe. We're questioning how genuine the information is.
Right.
So I think we're hoping to hear at or shortly after Misano, which is this coming weekend. So again, I mean, watch this space. The thing is, if you're Lorenzo and Casey says, no, I'm definitely not going, are you not tempted to take the risk for 25 points? Yeah. You know, it's, what is it? It's immortality against possibly not being a dad.
Right.
I don't know.
I like that.
And
well, hang on. One thing about, well, first of all, there's a really nice rant from Toby about this later on when we play that. I'm kind of annoyed with Rossi's position in this, because he basically doesn't want to be the bad guy, so he's constantly saying, well, I'm still thinking about it. Well, I'm going to wait until Casey and Jorge put it. You know, each one of these people should make up their own fucking mind. And then the dominoes would fall, and they would all decide, you know. But nobody's willing to just say, "Yeah, I'm going," or "No, I'm not going." Out of the main guys, right?
Carol Abraham and Hiroshi Aoyama have both said, "Yeah, we're going."
Yeah, I realize that, but I'm saying that the guys that actually have pull, right? The guys that the other people are looking to make a decision, don't make a freaking decision already.
It really surprised me, Matt Rossi. I thought he was doing a very clever little trick of leading them all down the path of saying no, because he very clearly never definitively said anything. He said, I think possibly, or maybe we should look at, it doesn't seem safe. I thought he'd then come out and say, oh, no, I'm going. I've had so much support from the Japanese over the years. You know, I couldn't possibly not do that, blah, blah. So I was really taken aback when he said, no, I'm not going.
Yeah.
But of course, he doesn't have a Japanese manufacturer putting any pressure on him.
Well, no. Not anymore.
Being cynical.
Yep.
But yeah, we will see, and no doubt, hopefully, we'll have some news next week to talk about. We can either have a rant, or the thing is, even if they go now, I think as far as PR in Japan goes, they've kind of stuffed themselves a bit.
Yeah, but it'll be forgotten if they go. They may have stuffed themselves for a little while, but a year from now, nobody will remember that. If they don't go, it'll be remembered for a long, long time.
But if they do go, I don't think it would be a wise thing for any of them to do any big particular, hey, look, I'm here, I'm supporting you.
That's probably true, too.
Cynical accusations of, yeah, would that be because your employer made you?
Right.
So, who did you meet at the meetup?
A bunch of people. All I know is that I went with 40 stickers and I came back with 6. So,
pretty good.
Yeah.
So either there's a couple of people out with like 18 stickers each, or you've got a bunch of people.
I have to tell you, so my indie trip started in a really, really bad way. The morning of the flight, I woke up in actually like a couple hours before, and it was a really early morning flight, like 6 a.m., so I needed to be at the airport at 5, but I actually woke up at like 3 with a really bad toothache, and by the time I got on the plane, it was, well, so before I took off, I had some painkillers with me that's from my previous dental emergency, which unfortunately I'm not a big fan of dentists, so I have these. I usually end up in a dentist's office only when there's an emergency, so I usually end up with, you know, like painkillers, whatever. So I took a bunch of pills thinking, okay, this will get me through the weekend, or through the day anyway, thinking, you know, this will just go away. You know, by the time I got to India, I had already taken all my painkillers on the flight there, and I was quite loopy. So in fact, the photos that I took on Thursday of Elena Myers going around in the Suzuki, I had the wrong lens mounted on the wrong camera. It was just
pretty, wow. They sound like good painkillers.
Yes,
right.
So next morning I was actually in a panic. Actually, even that evening, I was already in a panic, and I to use a Mark Millerism, to make a long story short, too late, I ended up at a urgent dental facility on Friday morning, and it was a scary place. It was a place where you walk in, you know. I don't mean to. Yeah, I'm working on dangerous ground here because I don't want to offend anybody indie. But I went to a place where I don't think they've had any people from outside of indie. We're all very excited that I was from out of town, and they had a sign on the wall that said, "Special this week, 3 extractions for the price of 2." I am not joking.
Kind of sums it up, yeah.
Yes. So I talked to my dentist back home, and I told him, yeah, this thing is killing me, but is there anything that you suggest me getting the thing? I just had some work done on that tooth, a crown put on. I didn't want to lose it. I don't want to have it taken out. He said, get an X-ray. If it's really bad, you know, let the dentist there decide. But if it's not anything really obvious, then just ask for some painkillers and some antibiotics. So they took an X-ray. I got some. It wasn't bad. There's obviously some inflammation, some kind of infection. I got some antibiotics, some very powerful painkillers. Again, long story short, too late. Saturday, by the time, you know, with the meetup, I was pretty loopy. The meetup was great. We had Scott Jones came over, and we had Jensen Asphalt and Rubber, and it was really a blast. I really made a mess of this. Thanks for everybody for coming out. It was excellent meeting you, and I actually kept running into people throughout the weekend. One of the funniest things actually was when I was walking outside of the track on Sunday, just you know, I had a little errand to run, and I ran into Ian Taylor, who's a fan of the show for many years and guy works with Writers for Health, and he was just walking on the street. So, you know, I ran into another guy who I usually see at La Ducati Day here in California, just random, you know, kind of meetings throughout the weekend. Like, so
wow, the whole town is just here for bikes. Yeah, that's quite cool.
It's very cool. It's very, very cool. And then, of course, in downtown itself, constantly running into people that you know. So, yeah.
Excellent. Now, as already mentioned, of course, Elena Myers rode, became the first female to ride a MotoGP bike, or at least officially.
Now, it turned out that's actually not the case. And in fact, why don't we do the little bit with her here? So Tim Walpole, who's the Suzuki PR guy, didn't really let her out of her sight. Every time that she was talking to anybody, he was there correcting things and making sure that she said the right stuff. It was kind of annoying, but it turns out that there've been other female riders on even the 800s. And everybody was confused about this, and he was correcting everybody. But anyway, so why don't we play that bit with her? It's entertaining, and you know, you can hear the enthusiasm in her voice.
Excellent.
You have a spare second?
Sure.
Hey, I'm Jules Cheesel from Moto Podcast, and we actually got to see you win that race at Infineon last year.
Yeah, this
is another first for you.
Yeah.
You're like the first female on a four-stroke MotoGP bike.
The 800.
No. There was 1,000? Somebody on 1,000?
No, there's been a couple of girls ride 800s.
Oh, really?
800s? Okay.
Yeah.
For like this kind of a thing?
Not like this, but for press tests. And I understand a girl rode Danny's last year, so that's not quite true, those statistics.
Oh, okay. She's the fastest.
Yeah. Oh, without doubt. First one on a race weekend.
Yeah.
Without it, that's what you can say. She's the first, you know, she's the first girl to ride a MotoGP bike on a MotoGP race weekend.
Perfect. I saw Alvaro
the
over there.
First one to ride on an Indy.
Yep.
Well, that is history.
First American girl, too.
That's right.
First girl in Indy. That is history.
That's true. Although not in a race yet.
No, well.
So I actually was watching, hanging out with Alvaro. He was checking out the, making sure his baby was okay.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's racing.
Did they give you a little chat before, like, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this?
Or yeah, just go, you know, go till you feel comfortable and, just riding around, I'm having a blast and, of course, I'm not gonna pile Alvaro's race bike down the road. So, I just had a blast, and I can't say enough about, you know, the team and American Suzuki just for giving me the opportunity. It's just truly incredible, and I'm just like another.
It's wicked cool. It's wicked
yeah,
cool.
I mean, I was in, I'm like in the same state of mind as I was last year when I won. I mean, it's just a state of shock and just wow.
Were you nervous when you were getting on the first time? Because I know something happened to the bike, right? Like it stalled?
Yeah, the throttle body.
Just it was a minor electronic problem, that's all. It's just a small electronic.
Is that always so?
Absolutely. But she did exactly the right thing. So the red light was on, stopped, didn't try and ride it back, did exactly the right thing.
Cool.
Without a doubt.
And then got to go out again. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's nice. The sort of thing that other people who were less experienced would have tried to ride it back and could have caused more damage. So what you did there was just spot on.
The straight must have been out of control on that thing, huh?
Did I get it up to 200?
You did?
I did.
We're talking miles per hour or kilometres?
Yeah, miles per hour.
Not quite.
Oh.
190.
Oh. About 300k touched.
So, I got to... This isn't the longest straightaway you guys go to. What are the top guys?
Qatar and
well, we do 324 has been touched, 328 I think is probably the top. So you did well, trust me. You did well, and the boys will tell you when you go back.
All right.
See the proper data.
Thanks, Elena.
Cheers, Dave. Thanks, man.
Okay, so that was Elena speaking to Jules, and she did 5 laps on Alvaro Bautista's GSVR. And Paul Denning had was quoted saying, you know, look, I am really impressed. You'd expect me to say that because it's Suzuki and she's Suzuki. But he said, no, seriously, she's not fast for a girl. She's just fast.
Yeah, well, just ask any of the super sport guys that have to race against her.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of press speculation that she could become the first female racer at the top level in the fullness of time. I mean, gosh, she's only, what, 17?
Yeah, yeah.
17, 18, so I mean, she's a kid. So there's probably an element of press hype because she is a girl and she is fast and she's quite photogenic and she speaks really well. And that probably is being a bit cynical, but, you know, I mean, she's become, she was the first female to win a full bore AMA race. Was it earlier this year or last year?
Last year, May.
Last year. But then that's obviously won, so that there will be some lads who are winning more often than that are probably thinking, well, no one's talking about my name. But obviously, we discussed this before.
Yeah.
The fact that she's a female may open some doors, but at the same time, it's going to heap a whole load extra pressure on her because everyone's looking at her. So I guess that's why Tim Walpole is, or you know, her PR people will be very careful that she's not getting misquoted or exploited or, you know, knowing what the press is.
Oh, good point, good point, good point. I mean, I think that my biggest worry is that she's going to get shoved into MotoGP the way Hopper was shoved into MotoGP. I really think that the right path, if you look at the statistics of successful riders, the right path is to go into one of the lower classes. She doesn't have to go to 125s, but she can go to Moto2 for a year or two.
Yeah.
And then step up, you know?
And that would
be... In fact,
there's
a really funny little bit. Actually, you know what? Let me play this other bit. I was actually going to save it as an outtake, but Loris Capirossi came over to congratulate her on the ride. Well, let's just play it.
Excellent.
Next time race, not on test.
Well, you could pay, maybe. You could pay for her to do it.
It's good.
Yeah, get her in Moto2 next year. You become team manager. No, you could. You could get team up.
Why not? Why not? Good luck, eh?
Thank you.
Thanks, Loris. Cheers, man. I'll come back
there to
see the boys.
So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, well, we'll get onto that when we talk about what's likely to happen next year. And that's something we'll have to ad lib. Now, the other thing that came out this weekend, Valentino Rossi has revealed that the planned post-Misano test of the Cadiz 2012 bike, which is somewhere between 800 and 1,000 cc, has been cancelled because the bike is not yet ready. Now, they've already tested a 2012 1,000 cc, so that would suggest that some fairly major alterations have taken place, and there's strong suggestions that they might be looking at an Ali frame rather than the signature Ducati carbon fiber frame. And that would be quite a step for Ducati because they haven't used one before because they went straight from steel trellis to carbon fiber.
That's right.
But I do think this might be a reaction to the HRC Yamaha test at Brno. I mean, I've only seen the written word, but some of the journos who do a fairly full assessment of when they're interviewing the riders were describing Valentino looked really quite pissed off when he was saying, well, we knew that Honda would be fast, but the Yamaha to be that fast out of the box. Bear in mind, Stoner Pedrosa, Lorenzo Spies, within four or five laps, were going quicker than they had done all weekend at Brno on the 800s. And Stoner, followed by Lorenzo and Spies, I think they were all like 0.2 of a second within each other, or from each other's times. And Rossi said afterwards, he said, that was really surprising. We have much work to do with ominous sincerity. So not the trademark little smile at the end, which normally suggests, yeah, but don't worry, we're on top of it. More speculation that he's going to say to Ducati, look, I'm sorry, you just haven't stumped up.
Well, the craziest rumor that I heard in the media center, and I'm only repeating it because it's funny in a way. It seems impossible, but there was a discussion going on that Ducati is going to work with Aprilia to work on the frame, since Aprilia has a lot of experience with those kinds of frames.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if Aprilia are interested in supporting some CRT teams, it might not be a bad idea for both of them. That could be quite mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
I think we haven't heard the rumour for a couple of years now, so let's start it again. Rossi to Formula One, I think that one we can bury because I think he's probably had enough of running around at the back. And as he said himself, you know, he can't go across to there and be competitive. He just can't.
No.
Well, particularly not Ferrari, because let's face it, Fernando Alonso can't go around and be competitive in a Ferrari at the moment. So, yeah, well, we'll see. I can't see him moving anywhere because there's no space. But again, we'll come on to that.
Yep.
But we had some racing.
Yeah, we did. We did. It wasn't the best, but, you know, something's got settled. Something's got closer. You know.
Well, we'll whip through these fairly quickly, I think, because one thing that we've become aware of is pretty much everyone who listens to this will have seen the races or at least be aware of what happened. The 125s, you know, we were talking after Brno when Nico Tirol had his DNF, his mechanical DNF. Wow, you know, his lead shrunk to 12 points. How will we react? He reacted pretty impressively. He was fastest in every session except FP1 and warm-up when... Efren Vasquez was top of the sheets with Nico just behind him. But, I mean, he qualified on pole with Cortesi and Zarco on the front row.
Qualified on pole by, like, 3/4 of a second.
0.720, yes.
Amazing.
That's quite impressive. And, I mean, his top speed, or his average speed, was like, 3.5 kilometres an hour faster than Cortesi. Zarco, his closest challenger, was in third. And Vinales, Danny Kent and Hector Faubel made up the second row. Vasquez, Folger and Gadea made the third row. Interesting with Danny Kent, Folger came back from illness to be told, no, the RSA is staying with Danny Kent and you can have his three-year-old RSW. And he's like, oh, okay, thanks. As it turned out, he didn't do too bad. No. But... Nico Tirol shot off at the front, and although he never pulled a huge gap, he was never really threatened.
No, he had controlled.
Yeah, I'm sure if he needed to, he could have put the hammer down and stretched it out a bit more. But there was a great punch up for second place with Vinales, Cortesi, Gadea, initially Danny Kent as well, but he ran wide, which happened a lot of times this weekend to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Rejoined and finished 13th. Now, Zarco had a very strange race. I mean, he was really close and
was second for a long time.
Looked like he might be able to close down the gap to roll. But then he just, I mean, he had a couple of real moments and he had one out the seat type moment. And then he just dropped back and back and back and back and back. You look at the lap progression chart, I think he went down to 6th or 7th at one point. And it's like, well, you know, don't know what was going on. Presumed he'd eaten his tyres or something. And then he just picked up and he had a really good battle for the rest of the race with Efren Vasquez, his teammate, and pipped him right at the end by 14 thousandths of a second. So finished 5th. But that means that... and the other one we do need to mention is Miguel Oliveira had the worst ever start from 11th to 30th due to a rookie mistake. He let go of the clutch too quick, front wheel went up and stalled the engine.
Ugh.
But he then came back and finished in 8th. But, you know, and Gonzalez put in Wave's small Portuguese flag. You know, very good run by him. And, of course, as people pointed out, him and Vinales were beating each other up in the Spanish championship last year.
Oh, yeah.
So I think he won more races than Vinales, even though Vinales was more consistent, so he won the championship. But what it does mean is Tirol is now 26 points clear of Zarco, which is, you know, greater than an entire race. So if he can maintain that, he can... go to the beach rather than race at Valencia if he wants to.
Right, right. And boy, was he looked relieved at the end of that round. Once he found out where Zarco finished.
Yeah, yeah. And that's whatever happened to Zarco, he's done him a huge favour.
Yep.
And I wonder if Zarco's now looking over his shoulder at Vinales, who's 13 points behind him and looking pretty good.
Right.
But there we go. That was the 1-2-5s. Then we went to Moto 2, and it was the weekend of Marquez again. I mean, God, he must be regretting the start of the season when he was chucking himself at the scenery a fair bit, or getting wiped out by Crazy Cyber's Frenchman. I don't mean Randy came down and ran in Moto 2 tonight. We're talking about our old friend Jules Cluzel, bless him. But Marc Marquez was on pole with Corsi and Iannone, who really does, after the break they had, seem to have come back rejuvenated. Brad Smith was fourth, Tom Luthi and Mathieu Pessini, with Paul Espargaro, Dominic Agata and Esteban Rabat. That was your front three rows. Significantly, Stefan Bradl started in 22nd.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's not really been any particular explanation. It just would appear that they couldn't get, for once, they couldn't get that Kalex working
track. He did get pretty beat up in FP3. He had that nasty crash.
True.
In turn four. I actually just wanted to mention that the Corsi was really on top of the game in QP, and it was only like in the last few minutes that Marquez got the pole, right?
Yeah. And Corsi, there's something strange about that lad. we'll come on to a bit. It wasn't the most ding-dong battle of the Moto2 season. In fact, the last six laps, I think, there was no change in the top six riders, which is unusual to see.
Right.
But Marquez went from third to second in the first lap, then settled behind Simone Corsi, who comfortably led for the first, I think, 8-9 laps, and then started to drop back. Marquez went past him. Espargaro and Rabat got in with him, and then he had a proper moment. Corsi, again, we've got this strange thing where you come onto the start-finish straight and you've got this raised berm, as they were calling it. It's basically a curb, but with a little ridge, and that's because there is more track outside that they don't want people using and then coming back on. So it's designed not to let them use. And a few people hit that this weekend, and he nearly got flipped. But then he just, I don't know if he lost his confidence, but he just went backwards. And Corsi, having led for 9 laps, ended up 14th. And we've seen this happen to him before.
Yeah.
It's just a few too many times. Probably the most impressive ride, though, was Bradl, who made his serene way from 22nd to 5th. And he was just, you know, I mean, you know, Lorenzo has this thing of the hammer and the butter, and he applies each one when it's appropriate. Well, this was butter all the way. He just glided past people with a kind of inevitability and very well controlled by Bradl. Unlike at Silverstone, which was admittedly in the wet, and he doesn't like it in the wet when he pushed and to make up places and crashed. But what is interesting is Marquez has now won more races than Bradl. Marquez having won with Paul Espargaro, nice to see him up there, second, Esteban Rabat third, Brad Smith and Scott Redding fourth and fifth, and very close for most of the race, and then Bradl a bit further back on in sixth. Simon Pessini, Callio, another good run from Mark VDS. Aleth Espargaro, Iannone down to 11th, didn't have a good run.
No. Nope.
They do think he ate his tyres. Agata, Simeon, Corsi, and Alex De Angelis making out the points. So we have Bradl on 193 points, 28 clear of Marc Marquez. So,
but
we're
it could have been 18.
At, yeah, exactly.
Could have been 18.
He did a remarkable damage limitation job there. Iannone and De Angelis are tied on 96 points. But, I mean, let's face it, this is very, very much a two-horse race, whereas the 125's got the potential of having a three-horse race.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be interesting to see how it goes from here.
Yeah. Why don't we play the Mark VDS audio. This is
excellent.
It's you'll hear me chatting with Andrea Olieri a few times there. It was quite funny because there was a point at which Andrea went off with his laptop, and he's their data technician. So he went off with his laptop, was looking at some graphs, and came back, and said something to Scott, and then Scott went out and started setting really fast laps. So I was like, later on, I was like, well, I'll just let you guys hear it. It's funny. So.
A good championship this year, but as far as now, we're doing really bad. So we're trying to step up things today. And yesterday, Friday, we did it actually pretty good.
Yeah. What did you find?
Which sense you mean?
I mean, because he wasn't, he kind of came out on a pointy end towards the end of the session.
Because I'm already, sorry?
Yeah, he came out to the pointy end of the session, at the end of the session. So he came in, went back out, and all of a sudden, it was much faster.
Oh, yeah, but, everything is nearly in his mind,
Yeah.
And he tried to put the bits together and to do one lap. Actually, here in Moto2, it's pretty tough. So you have to build your lap by lap and find the details with the lines and everything.
Yeah.
Which is the most important thing that you can do. This is it. I mean, the bike is there.
You guys had a good pace last year, though, right?
Yeah, we did have a great pace last year. We were in front row with both riders. We never know if the Kabbalah is coming back also this year.
What was the biggest factor, you think, this year that caused you guys to struggle this year? What's the biggest factor,
Well, this is a pretty long question, I would say. Mainly the championship step up a lot, and maybe we didn't actually kept the pace, and so this could be the main reason. But you see, the bike actually changed pretty much. It doesn't look like, but in the end, it's different bike. So we struggle a little bit to find our pace back. Hopefully, we will find in the second part of the season. This is why we're here.
You guys are running the Scooter again this year.
And
there's been a lot of people talking that the Scooter's being really built for Marquez.
I don't think this is correct. I mean, the bike is good for, I think it's the same bike for everybody. I don't know if somebody, start to think Marquez is pretty tough rider. It's good. And so we don't have to find excuses anywhere.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So you know, not this last time, but the previous time you came in, you ran over to him and you had something to say. Did you find something in the data that you looked at?
I just ran over because I went to the first corner and I found out something that I thought was good to try about lines.
Yeah.
And I'm going out and try. He picked this up, but he's doing, because he said I was in the right direction, but it's difficult, to go out there and do it straight away.
Yeah.
So you have to do it slightly different, but in that way.
So did he try it?
Yeah, he did try.
Did it work for him?
We'll see. Finally, if it works.
Yeah.
It's not to find a second. It's just, because there is a lot of G-force there. So when you flip the bike in, you have a lot of G-force straight away on the tires. So to avoid this, to be a little bit more gentle in this part, because you have a lot of speed, a lot of energy, a lot of G-force. Here you have a lot of consumption on that side, on the left. And so, to decrease the load of the tire for a bit.
Right. What data shows you that?
My eyes.
I thought you were looking at your laptop something.
No, just for this I went out there.
Okay.
I saw the first one.
I thought you were magically translating all those little graphs into...
Well, this you can also, but just because the first corner is so near to the guard. Usually I don't have the possibility because the first corner is far away from the guard. Impossible.
Yeah.
Or you have the recording, and sometimes you get from the recording, because we record in practice, so the guys can have a look what also the other guys are doing. Maybe something positive, or they know themselves what they do different. You know, for us, it's a little bit difficult, a little bit more difficult to understand. But they know straight away what the other guys are doing. You know, because.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have the feeling, the feedback from the bike, so they know how it looks like and how it feels like. So it's easy for them to look at the videos and rebuild the feeling that should be doing in a different way.
Just by seeing what the light is doing. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. It's a good video telemetry. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, now they're doing the slow motion shots, it's really,
yeah,
really
yeah.
interesting.
Big picture. So
good.
It's good for us too.
Yeah,
this curve caused many problems.
Yeah.
And like now he was complaining that it was jumping out of gear, because if you hit the curve and shift, that is under the record looks like.
Oh yeah.
We see. Boom.
Yeah.
Did it.
Okay, he's in the top.
That's a good one. That's a good one finally. Good start.
It's all you.
No, not.
You taught him how to do that.
I'm just a part of it. Okay. Everybody have to do his job.
Yeah.
Good start.
Oops. Oh. Who's that?
Who's that? And so on, Jules.
What a second. It's the same place. Oh man.
It went down with the head, huh?
Ooh. Wow.
Red flag, isn't it? There were so many crash with the 250 up there.
Same place,
yeah.
You look okay. Wow. Rattle went down. Where is that? That's
the guys.
Oh man. It's turn 3 or 4, right?
Sorry?
It's turn 4.
Turn 5.
Man.
Turn?
That's exactly what Scott went up.
Again.
Oh, look at this. He's on the mission, dude. Look at that.
Jeez.
Yeah. Scott Redding is 0.3 ahead. Yeah. Excellent.
This is the good part of the job. Really?
Wow.
This is just nothing, you know, but it's just having fun.
Yeah.
Be paid back for what you do.
And there it is, in this session. Scott Redding on top. Beautiful. Congrats.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I met Andrea very briefly at Silverstone. Very tall chap.
Very tall. Very tall.
But Ian Wheeler wasn't there this weekend, I don't think, was he?
No, he was not.
Ah, that's a shame, because he is one entertaining chap. He's yes. very entertaining.
And noticeably, Twit GP was very quiet. Anyway.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that would be a difficult concept to grasp, though, because Ian really gets into a lot of quite sharp banter with Twit GP. So would he have two phones for that, or if he was doing it to himself? Anyway, MotoGP, interesting weekend. Leading up to the race, it was kind of Stoner and Spies alternating who was going to be the quickest, with Danny was quickest to one session, and Jorge was sort of there or thereabouts, but never quite topped the time sheets on any of them. Colin was looking good. Nicky Hayden had a couple of good runs on some of the earlier sessions, but we started with Casey on the front row with the two lovely red and white Yamahas. The red and white being lovely, not the Yamahas. Well, they are. I'd like one. Anyway, second row was Danny Pedrosa, Andrea Dovizioso, and Colin Edwards, with Simoncelli, Hayden, Bautista, Barbera, Crutchlow, and De Puigne, row four, Ayama, Rossi, and Elias, row five, with Abraham and Caparossi bringing up the rear. Valentino had crashed right at the beginning of the QP session, and that's six crashes so far this season, which equals his worst ever. And I thought, in all sessions, that's actually in itself an incredibly impressive statistic.
Right.
The worst ever year in the Premier class. Bearing in mind, he rode 500 two-strokes, six in an entire season. That's pretty damn good. When you consider, I think, 1 year Randy De Puigne had 32 crashes in 18 meets. Mm.
And he's going for the to match that record this year, maybe. Although he did have a good weekend. Randy did have a good weekend.
Did. And to be fair, I think this year it's far more about the bike and how it obviously. Works with Rise than it is. Yeah, well, in the past, it was just Randy. Right. He was doing it all on his own. Right. It's all my own work. We did also have a slight bit of entertainment when Casey was going for a very fast lap on the during QP, and a something ran out, whether it's been reported as a woodchuck, a gopher, groundhog, or one person said a wombat. And I thought, strange. And, you know, I just had these images of Jorge and Wilco Zeelandberg chatting in the pits, and Jorge, you know, I don't know how we're going to stop Casey, and Wilco saying, hey, yes, no problem, okay? I got his little cage. I'm going to go out to this corner and wait for him to come along and just let it go. He's been trained. He ran in front of the bike, okay? We have him in Holland. There's when a boy wants to go out with a girl you want to go out with, you wait for him to come along on his bicycle, you let one of these go, and poof, he's down, and then your path is clear. That path didn't happen. So it wasn't Wilco Zeelandberg. Dutch people always start every sentence with, yeah, for sure. I don't know why.
Oh, man, dude.
Should hear my Dutch, though. I shouldn't be rude.
Too late.
Ik begrijp het niet. Ik ben Engelsman. There you go. That's a bit Dutch. Are you impressed?
I'm so impressed.
It just means I don't understand. I'm English, which basically covers me for every subject in the world. Okay, so the race.
So the fact that Rossi crashed in qualifying meant he had to go on this B bike, and the B bike actually was not set up the same way. I don't know why, because usually they settings they change on the A bike, they change on the B bike. Perhaps
this has always been the point with him, isn't it? That he's never differentiated. He doesn't have a favorite bike. They're right. Both set up exactly the same.
But yeah. That wasn't the case. At least that's what he claims. And they certainly weren't, you know, worried about weather. I mean, there was a little bit of dangerous looking clouds at the end of Saturday, but until that point, and that all cleared up by morning. But at the point that QP was going on, it looked like the weather was going to be steady eddy, you know?
Yeah. So there's no need to have a different setup.
No.
There was an awful shot of him head in hands and just not looking like any of us have ever seen him look before.
Well,
you know,
I remember that same look in 2006. That's the last time I've seen him looking that downtrodden.
Yeah.
When I don't remember what it was.
Or
he broke his arm. He broke his hand. It's when he broke his hand in Asin.
It's Motegi in 07 as well, wasn't it, where he was having that awful year.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but those are one-offs, whereas this, we're starting to see it every week, and it was just a bit shocking, but not as shocking as the race, which was a strange one. Basically, Danny led from Jorge at the end of lap one from Casey, and Nicky had a great start, whereas Ben Spies really didn't. Ben got kind of knocked about a bit, and I believe you've got a series of photos.
Yes, I am going to. I'm going to link in the show notes. You check out the show notes. I've got a series of photos that show the start from above, because I was at the top of the. I was actually on the roof of the grandstands. It's a really interesting view.
Wow!
And so I was like almost like a helicopter shot. So I have the whole start kind of. You can see what happens to Ben.
I mean, Dovey went across the front of him, but it's no one's fault. And Ben was quick to say that, but he got knocked back to ninth. And again, I mean, it was amazing to see an inevitability about his progression as he just worked his way up and up and up. And during lap 12, he appeared in Jorge's rearview mirrors, which, of course, he doesn't have. But at the front, we'd had Casey quickly got past Jorge and then quickly got past Danny. By the end of lap 7, Casey was out front, never seen again. Ta-da! Eventually won by nearly 5 seconds from Danny, who was second, by over 5 seconds from Ben Spies. And I'd been tweeting, watching the race, thank you, people of Wales, for not having any accidents early Sunday evening. And I was tweeting, I wonder if he'll overtake, if he'll be allowed to overtake Jorge. I don't think they'll have team orders. And by the time I finished the tweet and sent it, it was like, oh, yeah, he has. Right. But a very nice clean pass. And so he went on and got the third step on the podium. Jorge was fourth. And although he wasn't happy with the result, he said, that was the best we could do. Dovey was fifth, where's my results gone? There we go. And a really good result. Alvaro Bautista came in sixth. Colin Edwards was seventh. Randy DiPugno was eighth. Hiroshi Ayama ninth. Now, Valentino Rossi tenth. Rossi had a really interesting, strange race where he started from 14th, was up to, I think, 9th or 10th, and then the commentators were saying he's coming into the pits.
Right.
This was during lap 9. He rode off, went through one of the gaps in the barriers, was fiddling with something on the handlebars, it was traction control or what. It now turns out every time he downshifted, he was hitting false neutrals. Now, I did point out that James Whittam mentioning this, commentating on the Cadwell Park BSB this weekend, said, yeah, when a rider says he's getting false neutrals, it means he missed a gear. But I think when it's happening consistently, it probably is. He just had a whole bunch of them.
Right.
And you said your 9-1-6 has horrible false neutral problems.
It does. Although it was raced this weekend by Motopod listener Edwin Hazer. And he didn't have any problems with shifting, so maybe Whittam is right. And by the way, I'm reading the book, Whittam's book, and it's excellent. I'm about halfway through.
What it could do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's so honest.
It is.
And what I like about it, it's not funny by trying to be a comedy take on life. It's funny because life is funny.
Right, exactly.
It does not serve it well, yeah. Yeah, high time we had him back on. Appalling weekend for Ducati, really. So we had Rossi. He dropped all the way back. He was last place up to the end of lap 13 and then started to pick up and eventually came 10th, largely helped by the fact that Nicky Hayden went from 4th at the end of the first lap backwards. And he ended up actually coming into the pits and
just
only went out.
In the end.
Yeah, only went out again because there were less than 15 people still out there, and there were 15 people at that stage still out there. So he just circulated, but he finished. He got 2 points, but he finished 2 laps down.
Right.
Carol Abraham had come in. Loris Caparossi came in first. I mean, his team have started slagging him off. That's not publicly. This is not very impressive. And there was a really good beat up. The group fighting for eighth, you had Barbera, Randy DePugnier, Hiroshi Ayama, Valentino was just behind them. At one stage, Cal Crutzer was with them, but then Cal had a couple of moments and went back. Simoncelli had been in there. And Bautista,
was the other one who had a terrible race.
Yeah, Simoncelli said, for the first 5 laps, I was really enjoying myself. And after that, all I was doing was trying to stop crashing, which, credit to him, he did. I mean, okay, he finished 12th. His front tyre, oh no, sorry, it was Nicky's, apparently. His team said the front tyre was down to the carcass.
Yeah.
But Simoncelli had very similar problems, graining. And it's bizarre. They've got this problem at Indy with not much grip, but incredibly excessive wear, and people have made the point, it's new tarmac, and the edges of each stone are sharp, and it will take time.
Well, the fact that it's not grippy means that the tires are spinning also.
Right.
Although that doesn't really explain the front going first.
Well, you know? Sliding as well, I should think.
I'm sure there's sliding, but that wouldn't destroy the tire quite as much. I think the sharpness of the thing is probably the much more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, you know, the topic. Everybody was talking about the surface being so strange and so, you know, destructive to the tires. The Moto2 guys were also suffering big time. I mean,
yeah,
I think, Corsi had the same problem as Iannone, you know?
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, it was described at one point, it's like Qatar when there's been a sandstorm and it's dusty. Very right. abrasive, right. Also very slippy, so... yeah, so we ended. Oh, yeah, and Barbera got to the front of that group of eight.
Oh, and man.
The very final corner.
Oh, my God.
Being chased by a gang of nasty boys, he the front slid away and he crashed and he wasn't able to remount and finish. I mean, we were saying, just push it.
Right.
Push it across the line. As long as you and the bike are together and attached, you'll
That's
get the point.
That's a long straight, though. Yeah. But yeah, it was painful. I didn't see it because I was already. Trying to get towards Parc Fermé, but I was listening to Toby Moody. Toby Moody was announcing at Indy.
Yeah.
Again, this is the third year he's done it, which is really cool. But so I heard him saying, you know, oh my God, you know, Barbera's down in turn 16, and that's a, you know, it could be a very dangerous place to crash too. So I'm glad he was okay.
I mean it was Adam Mercado, which was just a comment on Speed TV to pick up Bob's former rants about them. He tweeted a few things at the end of the race, and he said, you know, and congrats to Barbera. You know, that's a really good result from eighth. So I tweeted him back and said, Adam, Barbera crashed on the final corner and DNF'd. And he was like, what? Speed never showed that. He was going into one. Go, why can't I get decent coverage here? we just had a few wrap-up points about it, really, that about Rossi and Nicky Hayden talking about the bikes. And we had the press conference at IMS last week on the show with Nicky and Colin being interviewed, and Nicky describing the difference to these bikes to the 990s, and he was saying, you know, it looks tamer, but it's actually sharper, and, you know, it's this thing of, so this analogy appeared of it, the 990s, you're crossing a chasm on a plank, so you've got a little bit of shuffle room either way, whereas now they're on an absolute knife edge, so if you keep on it, you're more precise, it looks more precise, but it's a whole lot easier to fall off it, and if it's a windy day particularly. So the championship points, and I think with this we can incorporate a little bit of where we think they'll be next year, which is quite simple at the top of the table.
Okay.
Casey now has 44-point lead over Jorge Lorenzo.
And three of those points, you know, due to the fact that there are no team orders, which I applaud.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Ben Spee's home race. You know, exactly. It's one of his.
Especially races. That.
And no one, I mean, Jorge was afterwards said, like, he's been quicker than me in every session. So, hey, no surprise that he beat me. That's fine. He said, that's my problem. It's not Ben's.
Right.
Which I thought was very mature from the reigning world champion. I don't think we'll be saying that for long. Oh, this was interesting. Did you see, I think it might have been Toby Moody who tweeted this.
No, it was me.
Was you, the big screen?
Yes.
With saying HRC and this big picture of Casey Stoner and his bike, and then underneath says 2011 world champion.
Not only that, but the other announcer also said that on the PA. Casey Stoner, the 2011 champion.
I don't know if Casey is a particularly suspicious person, but most of them seem to be. You know, I mean, we see Rossi with his pull the letters out the crack of your ass routine at the beginning, and that, you know, all these little. If I was Casey, I think I'd be pretty pissed off at that. Look, the only thing is, mate, if I don't win, you're going to make me look a bigger ass than I'm going to look anyway. And Andrea, tell the baby to shut up. I'm on the phone. That's what he'll be saying at the end of the season, maybe. But he should win. Six races, 44 points. It's certainly not insurmountable. I mean, Jorge's putting his head down and, you know, showing himself on blind faith, saying, I'm not giving up anything. I won't give it up.
But, of course. I've only seen anybody claw that kind of stuff back in the modern era in 2006 when Rossi clawed it back, and he still lost the championship.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's the real bummer, to come back all the way and then not make it. Of course, we saw it, Colin and Troy in 2002.
Right.
And Colin
right.
did catch him and pip him. And I mean, Troy Bayliss now says there was a horrible inevitability about that. But then we saw it with Hager and Tozel in the 2007 in World Superbikes. And again, Norrie fell just short.
Yep.
He did everything
he could, but it just wasn't enough.
Casey next year, HRC. Jorge next year, Yamaha. In third place, comfortably in third place on 174 points, Andrea Dovizioso. Next year,
not HRC.
Possibly Grassini, possibly on a factory Grassini, possibly LCR.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly on a factory spec LCR. I think that's unlikely, or close to factory spec. Latest one I've heard is, and I think this was just speculation, was possibly Tech Toir.
Oh, wow.
Which we'll come on to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he's dropped because his manager pissed off HRC for enforcing his contract that HRC offered him last year for this year, how better than to stick it to them than go to another manufacturer?
You know, this isn't Biaggi getting blacklisted. I don't think it's quite that bad. I mean, this kind of thing goes both ways, right? I mean, you screw a driver, a rider like Dovi, who hasn't done anything wrong.
No.
You know,
he did was fulfill his contract and ask them to fulfill their...
Exactly. Yeah, he hasn't done anything wrong. That could be a PR nightmare for them too. So I don't think that they're going to be blacklisting him from Honda.
No.
But I think that he might be better treated, you know, at Tech Trois.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he might enjoy that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, and let's not forget, he did really, really well in his on a satellite Honda in his first season. He was phenomenal.
Yep.
Danny Pedrosa, fourth in the championship, 130 points, 44 behind Dovi. Obviously, he missed those four races. HRC next year, no question. Ben Spee's fifth, 5 points behind Danny. He's going to stay at Yamaha.
Mm-hmm.
And Valentino Rossi's been relegated to sixth in championship, 1 point behind Ben. Ducati next year is the contract, despite growing speculation that he'll A, retire completely, B, finance his own team with a near factory Honda, Or C, move to World Superbikes. Can't see that happening.
I can't see C.
Nope.
B seems kind of crazy. I don't see him walking away.
I think he'll stay.
I think he'll stay at Ducati.
He would not... Yeah, I mean, if he walks away, you know, he's going to leave himself open to those who like to, you know, snipe at him. That's mainly Max Biaggi and me.
Yeah, I don't think he really cares about being sniped at like that. I think he just sees...
I think he cares about his legacy, though.
You know, absolutely. I think that the legacy would be that he had a challenge and he walked away from the challenge.
And I don't think he'd like...
Nah.
Nicky, on 105 points in seventh place. Now, does he have an existing contract, do we know, for Ducati next year?
This is the kind of thing that I can't believe we don't know, but I'm pretty sure he is going to stay at Ducati.
I've got a feeling he was on a 2-year and then they extended it for 2 years, which would mean next year as well.
Right.
Colin, now this is interesting. Colin in eighth place in the championship, 84 points. He's
absolutely not going to be
with Tech Toi.
With Tech Toi. That's been announced by both him and Poncherel.
Hervé Poncherel, yes. The head of Tech Toi Monster Yamaha Racing team. Looks like it's going to be a CRT team. Possibly Ford Racing was a rumor. But Colin is going to have a press conference at Misano on Friday PM to confirm his 2012 plans. But the rumors that he might go back to World Superbikes seems unlikely, as he described the series as a bit of a ghost town recently. Not so likely that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Marco
Simoncelli. Colin has been saying quite a few times over the weekend at the writer's auction was the first time I heard it. He said that a CRT, an R1 powered CRT bike would be a very competitive machine in MotoGP next year. So that will be really interesting because we have not heard anything about anybody building an R1 based team yet. It's all been about the Pirelli and BMW. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Keeps the link Yamaha going.
Exactly. He's the one guy that can do it, you know, and the other one is a definitely viable motor.
Yeah, yeah. Cross plane. That's what I was. Yeah, getting confused. That's something technical. Marco Simoncelli in ninth on 80 points. Well, I don't think he's going to... It doesn't look like HRC are going to have a third Repsol full factory bike, which leaves Marco looking at staying at Gresini on the factory spec bike, possibly. Or, and this has been a rumour for a while now, a three-rider team with Ducati. Really? Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation before. Right. Does he really want to go and be in the same team as his mate, Valentino? Because if he starts going quicker, Valentino won't be his mate. I can't imagine he'd do that. But this is Sideshow Bob we're talking about. Anything is possible where Marco's concerned. Wherever he goes, he's going to be competitive. And I suspect, seeing his raw pace, he will get a decent seat.
Somewhere.
Yeah. 3 points behind him, his teammate Hiroshi Ayama on the very much non-factory spec Gresini bike. There are doubts. Yeah, I mean, have we ever started a season without a Japanese rider? I can't think.
Yeah, before Hiroshi Ayama, there was no Japanese rider.
That's right, we did, didn't
for
we?
One
we
year.
Had the one year of no Japs and no Brits.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is... pretty shaming for both nations, I think, considering their history and involvement. But, don't know where he's going to be, if anywhere. Hector Barbera, Gonzalo's pointed out, pretty sure that he's going to stay with Aspar for next year, and they're considering turning into a two-rider team, possibly CRT. I don't think they'd be allowed to be CRT. I think CRT is only for new teams. Don't know about that one. Alvaro Bautista, 49 points, 12th place in the championship. Played with awful luck this year. If Suzuki run in 2012, I can't see them changing from him.
No, he's been really, really good.
He's been tough, and I think he's got on with the team, and I think they're impressed. I don't know what it is. It's like remember James Whittam saying about the loyalty of Kawasaki riders? You know, guys who ride Kawasaki's tend to only ride Kawasaki's. And we see that with Jim. Jim's a big Kawasaki fan. Yeah. Although James Whittam did point out, once you bought pea green leathers, you're kind of stuck for 10 to 15 years. Suzuki with MotoGP ride. I mean, look at Hopper's loyalty to them. No, I'm not going to run for it. No, I've been offered a seat on this. I've been offered a seat on no. Oh, I've got two wildcards with Suzuki. Thank you very much. I'll have that. You know, and Bautista, you know, good for him. Hopefully he'll be there. Hopefully they will be running at least one bike. Hopefully they might be running two. And we did have this rumour released. There was this press statement by a company that make engine oil and work with Suzuki.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, we're really excited for 2012. You know, we've been working very closely with Suzuki, and you know, and our involvement in the MotoGP paddock will be continuing. And we've had to step up our game because we needed a very different oil for a 1000cc engine or something along those lines.
Right, exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
13th place, Carol Abraham. Damned good show, young man. Probably going to stay on dad's team, mm-hmm. I'd imagine. He's had some bad luck, but I just, what a likeable chap. And also, for a first season, after so much, maybe he only got the ride because of his dad. He possibly did only get the ride because of his dad. Elena Myers might only get the ride because she's a girl, but she won't keep it if she can't perform. He wouldn't have kept his ride, dad or no dad, if he couldn't perform. But 13th, he is performing. He's doing a bloody good job. Tony Elias in 14th.
Is not.
No.
He's not going to be there next year.
No, Moto2, I'd imagine. Can't see him going to World Superbikes. He looked like a kid who'd nicked his dad's bike. I mean, I know small guys can ride big bikes sometimes, but I'm not sure that would suit him. I don't know. We'll see Tony racing somewhere, no doubt.
I don't know, man. I totally see him at World Superbikes. I don't know.
Really?
The fact that he went to... Well, there's many theories of why he went to GPs. That Dorna wanted to make sure that Moto2 was seen as a step-up class. But,
yeah.
But you know, he's got a lot of pride, I think, also. So I don't know if World Superbike is considered a step down because, you know, a lot of riders have done really well there. Max Biaggi, for example, I think is a great example of somebody who... Carlos Checa, too. So I can see him. I mean, he's not that... It's his size, I don't think, will be the issue. I think, you know, motivation is the biggest issue with him because he always has these, you know, weak seasons at the beginning and then boom, you know.
Yeah.
He's the contract writer.
Him and Alex De Angelis they're starting to perform. It must be contract time. But wherever he's going to be, it ain't going to be in the MotoGP paddock. Yeah. I would happily put money on that one. Embarrassingly for him, 15th place, 7 points behind Tony Lewis, is Cal Crutchlow, and that'll be a factor of the DNFs. But Cal's got a contract for next year with Tech Trois. I have absolutely no reason to believe that that's going to be broken by either of them.
And he's doing a really good job taking over for Colin Edwards as the class clown. He is a funny, funny guy, the guy.
He is, isn't he? He's brilliant. I mean, brilliant to talk to because he's absolutely deadpan delivery.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then you just have to listen to the words and think, hey, okay, or, oh, yeah, he's taking the mickey. In 16th place with 29 points, Loris Caparossi, his plans for next year, Caribbean, Mediterranean.
Probably. Yeah. Some country that he hasn't, you know, broken the tax code in yet.
Yeah. He likes his money, doesn't he? 17th, and this is sad, 27 points, 2 points behind his teammate is Randy Depugne, who's just riding the pants off that thing right to the point that it dumps him on the deck. Maybe still at Pramac, maybe back to LCR. Don't know. I would expect and hope that there'll be a seat for Randy somewhere because I think he's good for it. And it means Lauren hangs around, which I'm sure lots of them are going to like.
You know, I'm going to go on a limb and say that no, we're not going to have Depugne next year. And I think that despite all of the crashing issues, I think that Cluzel may be on a CRT team.
I was going to say, they'll keep him if there's no other French involvement, and the only other French rider I can think of that would be possible would be Jules Cluzel.
Jules Cluzel has to have a better finish to this Moto2 season because it's been kind of a disaster for him. He was much better last year, and in the 250s he was very entertaining. But yeah, I don't know. I think that Depouniez is beat up, and he's been in the MotoGP class for a long time.
Yeah,
you know, he's been there for a long time, and
did he come in 990s or was he?
Yeah.
Did he?
Oh yeah. He was in the Kawasaki. With Shinya Nakano.
And then Olivier Jacques. Were they teammates? Because didn't they have a bit of a dust-up at one point? I don't think there was no national bonding going on there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see him. Now, I've included one of the wildcards we've seen this year, as in John Hopkins. If Suzuki run two riders, I'm sure Paul Denning would be pushing hard to have Hopper join Bautista. And I think he's proved through BSB and the wild cards with both World Superbike and MotoGP that he is deserving of his second chance. As we've talked about before, not many people at this level of world sport get a second chance. Well, bloody good for Hopper for taking it. Talk about
the best of it.
Yeah. Talk about, you know, a rejuvenated character, and Gonzalez added, look, please give him something better. I presume he means than this year's Suzuki. Although it's been looking, I mean, Alvaro's been running with the mid to upper half packs. It's just, it seems a bit like the Ducati. It's an absolute knife edge between, yeah, I'm on the edge, I'm on the edge, I'm on the edge, I'm there, oh, I'm down. Okay, potential new arrivals. Tech Trois are going to have to put someone in next to Cal. Candidates that have been mentioned, Bradley Smith, doing very well in Moto2, Eugene Laberty and Marco Melandri, who, of course, are out of work in World Superbike paddock because Factory Yamaha are leaving, possibly Dovi. And we've already mentioned Collins thing. Now, Stefan Bradl is looking very likely to be promoted to MotoGP for next season. Which team remains uncertain, whether it be a CRT team or one of the satellite teams?
Well, the last time we talked about this, it was going to be the current team moving up and running a BMW motor.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Which is
Uberales.
And I think what's going to be tough for the new kids coming up is people, it'll be difficult at first to assess their personal performance because we won't know the level of the bike. Now, having Colin on a CRT team, now obviously some CRT teams are likely to do better than others, but at least that'll give us, there's one known factor, there's one control group in there, which is Colin. Mm-hmm. We know how quick Colin can be. So if they're keeping up with him, they're doing really well, you know. So
right, good point.
The other thing is Marc Marquez attracting a lot of interest, but it's like, oh God, come on, hang on. The kid's gone 1-2-5, champion first year, straight up. Moto2, he's second, and he's the only person with a realistic chance of catching Bradl. Julian Riley said, I think it would be a good idea to leave him in Moto2 for another season to continue to develop. Bear in mind, I mean, it took him 4 or 5 races to be able to stay upright for the full lappage. He's 18. Let's not pile too much on him too quick, would be my feeling. But, you know, hey, we see it in all sports now. As soon as your name's known, people start clamoring for you to be promoted. But I'm not sure where.
You know, he can really breakdance well, that guy.
Marc Marquez?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Man of many talents.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another thing. Someone said at one of the parties, was this you again? It said every girl who walked past you was like, hey, how you doing? Apparently he was very keen to talk to lots and lots of young females, and you know, credit to him.
Yep. Him and Redding were the danger man.
Yeah. Yeah, now he's a character too. But, yeah, so someone said they were getting on quite well, even though they've had a couple of spats on the racetrack, but it's nice to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mentioned the best crazy rumour of the weekend, Aprilia to work with Ducati to build an aluminium twin spar frame. Right. Now, we have two choices here.
Well, let's go to Toby. Let's play Toby. Toby, which was actually before the race, but since it's really about the state of GP and Motegi and all that kind of stuff that Toby's been keen to talk about, let's just play it now, and we'll come back and we'll talk about the other series.
Okie doke.
Cool.
And I wasn't recording. What an idiot. All right, this is Jules. I'm here with Toby Moody at the Crown Plaza Hotel. And we're watching on the TV. There's a game between the Colts and the Green Bay Packers, which is friendly. This is the second time we're doing this. All right, so it's Friday, and we've had two free practices. Great weather, really good weather. It looks like it's going to stay good. And so I just wanted to grab a chance to talk to you about the season so far and, you know, what's going to happen in the next year, because the last year of the 800s, very strange rule changes coming down the pipe with the CRTs and very strange thing going on, you know, with the aliens, because one of the aliens is not really figuring so much this year. You know,
the what's not figuring?
The aliens. You know,
the aliens, sorry, yeah.
So, just general kind of impressions of the season so far. It has been an interesting season.
Season panned out with, you know, well over a year ago, probably at, I don't know, a ref early on in 2010.
Yeah.
With Stoner saying, you know what, I'm going to leave Ducati and I'm going to go and ride a Honda. Livio was there. It happened. You can't blame Stoner for wanting to prove that his 2007 championship was by him and not the bike. He wins the first race in 2011. Bang. Here we are. We've had 11 races. He's won 6 of them.
Yep.
All other things being equal, he's going to win the title.
Right.
He's going to win the title. He deserves to win the title. I get mail saying, are you president of the Casey Stoner fan club? He's prickly. He's difficult at times. But holy moly. He can ride a bike. We've seen 1,000 frames per second on Red Bull. We've seen all the stuff. I've seen him by the racetrack. I see him every Friday morning and every Saturday morning. 6 laps, bang! You know, and everyone else takes 15 to do what he does. He's the best, rawest, fastest motorcycle racer on the planet today.
Well played. That whole thing with him going to Honda, you know, like, you get super kind of like, did he have that plan, you think? Did Super have the plan of trying to get Stoner over to Honda when he was going over there?
I don't know why Livio left Ducati. I might find out when we're drunk in 10 years' time in a bar somewhere, but Livio's a very driven man. Oh, yeah. He's a very clever man, and he's a forward-thinking man. Do you want to stay at Ducati forever? Do you want a fresh challenge? Do you want the sort of Michael Schumacher? Do you know what? I'm going to go and drive for somebody else because I'm going to prove that I can win rather than the car winning for me. And that's exactly what I said a moment ago about Casey.
Yeah.
Honda need a winner this year. Here we are. We've had 4 complete seasons of 800. And 12 championships, because the 3 championships a year with rider, constructor and team, and Honda have won nothing.
Yeah,
and they invented the flipping rule.
Yeah.
I mean, what a shocking teapot. Ironically, this year they're going to win all 3, all other things being equal.
Yeah.
They are. But they've only just got underneath the door by doing that, because if it wasn't for Stoner, you'd probably believe that Jorge would be leading the championship if we worked it out. But if buts and what, that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
But you have to believe that Jorge would be leading the championship if Casey was on a Ducati. But Casey is the only man to be victorious on a carbon fiber chassis 800.
Yeah. Yeah.
right? All the others are nowhere. Nowhere. Valentino, yeah. A lucky podium in Le Mans because two people went in the head.
Yep. Yeah, actually, and I think he's even said that at this point that there's no real tracks. There's no tracks really where you can see enough of an advantage on the...
Cranberry juice?
The Ducati would have some kind of advantage. I mean, I was thinking, like, Sepang. It's not going to happen at Phil Island because Keystone is going to be amazing at Phil Island.
He'll win it on Thursday.
So, this is going to be the first season where Rossi is not going to win a GP since he started.
I had a bet with a mate in London who's a very, very well informed guy. Not part of the paddock, but he can see through the bullshit.
Yeah.
And we had a surreptitious bet with ourselves, and we agreed in the bet.
Okay.
Last October that Valentino wouldn't win a Grand Prix.
Really?
Last October. I bloody nearly put it in writing, and I hesitated, and I hesitated, and I hesitated. Nobody will believe me now I've said it. Oh, well, Toby's just making it up. I'm not making it up. That's what Chris and I had a bet with. And we just had a feeling in our water that it could be the disaster. Everything he's touched has gone to gold for 15 years.
This is the one.
This is Valentino, and sooner or later you won't win. And it's a blasphemous thing to say for all the yellow Rossi teeny boppers and whatever. But the historians and the people who understand the sport will know that sooner or later you just don't win. It just runs out.
And it's just done.
It is. It has been a brick wall. It has been a cliff.
Yeah.
Which has been surprising. But Ducati have come up with, you know, they brought the GP12 forward, and that's what they're running at the moment. They call it an 11.1. It's a flipping 12.
Right.
It's got an odd engine in it because it's a 1,000cc engine stroked down. They're going to make an
alien. If you're a journalist, do you sometimes have to hold back with those kinds of opinions?
Yeah, because you could look a complete muppet. And I could have written in October, oh, Valentino Rossi's never going to win another Grand Prix. Or win a Grand Prix in 2011. What am I going to gain from writing it except for my own little personal pride? And I just think, you know what, I don't want to rock a boat. I know I had that bet with my mate.
Well,
we can have a drink about it in London in October and go, well, or November and say, you want it. I want him to win. He's good for business school.
You want
him to win.
Oh, yeah.
You want him, don't you? I don't even have to put a gun to your head. That we want him to win because it's the fairy tale. It's quite cute. If I can use that word, I'll eat it. But the fairy tale is there. It happens to all the good racers. Look at Schumacher.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm reading on the internet and Twitter only this weekend that Schumacher is 20 years in Formula 1 this weekend in Spa. Oh, wouldn't it be great to see him on the podium? No, he's past it. Who the hell signed that off at Mercedes? Who the hell thought he was going to do it? Or sell more cars, even if he didn't win.
Right.
Is he really? Is Michael Schumacher promoting more people to buy a Mercedes over a BMW or an Audi?
Yeah, amazingly, I think like 90% of Mercedes owners don't even know who he is. You know?
No, and he's acerbic and he's terse.
It's funny that you mentioned that because that is actually exactly the same kind of thing as the Rossi thing, right? It's like put the national pride all in one basket.
The difference is Valentino, even when he's not winning, they're selling more bikes.
Well,
in Ducati,
that's true.
As a whole, producing out of Bologna and selling worldwide as they did before the dip, middle of 08.
Yeah.
It is him. He is VR. VR Schumacher, two totally 180 degrees different people.
Well, it's also the fact that, you know, motorcycles are much closer to tied to racing no matter how you look at it, whereas cars are vehicles.
Especially Ducati.
Yeah,
especially Ducati. Lifeblood and economic structure is based around racing.
Right.
From a 888 all the way through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's still just hard to believe that the cliff was so steep.
He will win next year. That is my... As negative as I may sound about 2011 and him not winning a race in 18 races,
so
he will win next year. You watch. There's something going on that we don't know about. Of course he is. Are they going to build an aluminium chassis? I've got a hunch that they are.
They may not run it, but they're definitely...
They're going to try it.
Yeah.
The difficulty is, have they got the experience in Ducati are they twin spar, aluminium, delta box and the rest of commerce. What experience have they got to fall back on? That's when the Aprilia guys are going to be jumping ship.
You know, I don't understand Italian, but I heard Paolo Scalera and a bunch of his little buddies over there, you know, and the words were coming out, you know, Ducati, Aprilia, Rossi, so I was like, oh yeah, he's talking about probably this kind of stuff, you know, and
interesting. Yeah.
Hey, okay. Let's get off the Rossi thing, because we beat this thing up, this topic up all the time. Because there's two other towns I want to talk about, is Belgium and Shelley. And what's going to happen to Repsol? I mean, it's not going to be a three Repsol team up here, you know. And,
I just got engaged.
By the way, these things face this way, so we're totally good.
Okay.
It just looks
I'm shielding
like
the microphone from the barman, but apparently.
We're all good, we're all good. One of the co-hosts of the show did this really interesting analysis of the potential. If you take Simoncelli's pole position, qualifying positions, and then his actual results, and then Dobby and his actual results, the difference is staggering. It's absolutely staggering. And yet, I don't think that Dobby, you know, is a potential winner, whereas he's a winner when something happens to, like, three guys.
He's a great number two.
Can win against any of them.
Simoncelli's a fighter. Simoncelli's a fighter. Dobby, you know, we saw some glimmer, some great, no, some magic sparkles from Dobby. He's a world champion, man.
Oh, yeah.
So is Marco in the middle class.
Yep.
And Dovizioso won some great 250 Honda races on a Honda when he shouldn't have won, because the thing was a mutt. Simoncelli, there's some flair about him, and there's this bubble aura atmosphere, call it what you will, about Simoncelli. It's the hair, it's the gangliness, it's the giraffe kind of loose-limbed willowiness that he's got. He doesn't get a start, as we saw at Le Mans. And that, he's a racer, and he's raw, and he's great.
You know what I heard that really describing well, there was a French journalist sitting next to me who was really into surfing, and he said Simoncelli's like a surfer. He's like one of those cool, you know, just chill dudes who's out there, you know, and Dobby's not.
No.
You know?
Dobby's ahead of him in the championship, let's not forget. He is third in the championship. By a long way.
There's
Marco, I mean, what was he? A race ago was behind Ayama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, oh dear.
On a factory machine.
Oh dear. You know, in Japan are paying your wages. Oh dear.
Yeah.
So, it's... You know,
what's it going to take for him to be, remember when in 2003 Marco Melandri was considered the randomizer, the crasher, and then he went under to Grassini, and there was this kind of, like, mythical thing attached to Rossini being able to calm his rivals down. He did the same thing with Sette. Sette was a crasher, you know, back in his Suzuki days. Came over and became a, you know, contender.
Well, you had to crash the Suzuki because it wouldn't go very quickly.
And
it was a Honda V5, but, you know, I mean, you and I could have really got some points on that, relatively speaking. What do you say? But Marco, he has made some silly mistakes. You know, he crashed at Laguna and shouldn't have done. That was harsh. And, you know, he crashed at Silverstone and he shouldn't have done. He's got to get it to the finish. He's got to get it to the finish a bit more often. Yeah. He's got his podium. Right, now you've got to... He needs to win a race between now and Valencia in the next seven. So,
Where is he going to be? Another Grissini year?
If he goes to Pramac, I think he's a fool. I think if he goes to Pramac Ducati, I think he's a fool.
There's some legs to that rumor? Mm. Yeah?
Wow. On a Friday night. Monday night might be different, but here and now, whenever you're listening to this, you know, Friday night, August 26th,
There's some legs to that. Is he going for the money? Is Canat pushing him for the money? It's a difficult decision when somebody waves an awful lot of money in front of your face or whatever.
Right. Then again, you know, it is going to be a hole in the daddy.
And then again, he might not have an option of Honda. Right. It works both ways. You thought very well us saying, oh, well, why are you going to Ducati? Why don't you stay with Honda?
Well, maybe
they're not offering him.
Yeah.
Maybe the stuff that we don't know about that's fallout from Le Mans, or maybe Panat rubbed them up the wrong way, easily done, of course.
Yeah.
So,
is Pedrosa, you think, still a, they're, I mean, obviously, they're super happy about Stoner, Honda, and Repsol. They, you know, they could be more pleased, but does Pedrosa still have an equal kind of treatment there, you think? For next year?
I'd imagine so. They've both got contracts that were signed pretty well at the same time. They've both got a contract for 11 and 12.
I mean, the other contract, and yeah, I think that they
didn't want to give him the bike, did they? I mean, that was a messy fight.
It was.
Yeah. It says here on this piece of paper that you need to give my rider a ride. Oh, goodness me. All right, then. I mean, they give him they almost will give him the floor sweepings.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that's all the more admirable that Dovizioso has done so well this year, Jules, because he's sticking two fingers up, isn't he? You didn't really want me here. Well, I'm going to prove to you that I'm justified here. And fair play to both parties for actually getting on with it and doing it.
Right.
And when I say floor sweeping, of course they're not going to give him some muss. But you had a feeling this time last year whilst the arguments were going on. Honda didn't want him. Bottom line. Oh, well, we'll give you a Grassini ride. It's equally a works ride. Oh, yeah, but it's in this piece of paper here that I must be in the works team with Grassini. I'm not swearing about the triple up.
Yeah. I've always felt that Dovi kind of thrived as an underdog. And you put in. And, I mean, when he was fighting Lorenzo in the 250s, that the Honda, you know, was not up to par with the Aprilia, and you know he was able to beat him quite, you know, three or four times, and always followed.
Yeah. I remember he won at Estoril 1 year, 2006, and he won at Turkey 1 year. It was a mega win. Never won around.
Yeah.
But he did it. And he did it well. Yeah, there's a lot of people that do underdogness.
Because there's no pressure. You know, if you don't win, then you can always say, well, you know, I'm riding a something like that. If you win, you're a hero.
And, of course, it's ironic that he's trying to win races when his teammate is electrifying.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, how far would Casey be ahead if he'd not been knocked off in harassing?
Oh, I know, exactly. Exactly. It would be, you know, in the bag. Okay, everybody's favorite topic, Motegi. You wrote an article a couple months ago about how much these riders owe to Japan for their lifestyles, and earlier today you were talking about the fact that their lives are so removed from the lives that you and I lead. You know, like you were saying, that they don't. When was the last time they booked a flight? You know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, somebody else books flights for them, and somebody else organises hire cars for them because they're paid to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And they're paid very well, and they're paid admirably. Almost danger money, one can say.
Yeah.
It's a bit like driving a petrol truck. You get more money driving a petroleum truck than a trash.
Right.
Because you've got to be a bit more responsible. And they are, you know, they're the best 20-odd riders in the world, and they deserve the money that they get because they're the best in the world.
Yeah.
Even if you're the best tiddlywinks player in the world, you're the best in the world. But as you say, they get wrapped up by team management to not worry about, quote, normal life, because they need to be paid to worry about going quickly on a motorcycle. That's what they're paid to do. Going on from that, you're leading me on a little bit here, Jules. You know, their real world conception. The thing that annoyed me about the whole thing is, we want a report. Okay, here's a report. Paid for by Dorna or FIM or whoever. Here's a report.
Well,
we don't believe that.
Yeah.
Well, what the
I don't know how much I can swear
you
on
you
this.
You can totally swear. You can swear.
Oh, yeah. We know. And then the report comes out on the end of July. A couple of weeks later, we go to Monaco, and we ask some of the riders, doesn't matter who, you know, have you read the report? Oh, no. For fuck's sake, he's been out for 10 days. And read it.
Who said that?
Valentino. And he's cleverer than that. He's cleverer than that.
Yeah.
Because he listened to some people when... Well, why aren't you going to Japan? Because my friend tell me it's dangerous. Well, why is it dangerous? My friends tell me, well, here are the facts. And then he listened, and he went, ah, you can see the change in his eyes. He went, ah, okay. I'll investigate that. But other people, they didn't read the report, and other people have said this weekend, I don't trust the report. The reason I get wound up about this is, Jules, when your central heating boiler breaks down, are you very good at mending your central heating boiler?
Probably not.
So you get somebody in to do it,
because
that's what he does for his job. Fixes pipe work, fixes... I'm having trouble with my eyes. I need to go to an optician. Hello, Mr. Optician in the high street. Can you fix my eyes? Certainly, Mr. Moody. Here are some glasses. Give us a couple of $100. And, I can now read the newspaper at 3 foot away. That's what he does. Do these riders trust the mechanics with their lives? Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they don't trust people who are being paid to do a neutral report. Sure, everybody says, well, how neutral is it? They've been given bungs. They've been given brown envelopes, and it's all a bit of a switch. Well, do you know what?
But there's been other reports.
There's been other reports, and here and now, nobody can actually say that you're going to grow a third arm or your balls are going to drop off or whatever. Some people don't want it to happen because it's just easier that we don't go, and I can see their point of view. Some people want to go because we need to support the Japanese, whatever. There are no hard facts by anybody who knows anything about nuclear stuff that says it's dangerous. If Toby Moody goes and has an optician's test and, sorry Toby, your eyes are fine, I'll walk back out on the high street and I'll come back in 5 years' time and have my eyes tested. That bloke knows more about that subject than me. So why should I, you, the barman here, or a motorcycle racer in 125 at the back of the grid who's not scored a point this year, or the reigning world champion, or somebody at the top of MotoGP, question someone else's professional integrity? That's what I get angry about.
I think it's a control issue. These guys live with danger every day, but they feel, even though it's not true always, they feel that they're in control of that danger. And this is
so are you. I mean, you don't go free parachute jumping off the Eiffel Tower, do you?
Not either.
No, you don't do it because you think, I'll stick to it, that's fine.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, they're used to danger, and this is the kind of danger that they, I think they're control freaks, and they don't have any control over this.
I think it's beyond that. Japan is a difficult race to work at. It's not an easy race to work at because the riders actually stay in a hotel at the track. But for a lot of people, particularly the lesser teams and the lesser team personnel, they stay away.
Are you saying
it's a subconscious thing about Japan. I don't mind Japan. I think it's quite fun.
Yeah.
For a week, 10 days or so. I think it's quite fun. It's a bit cute. It's a bit wacky. You have a laugh, but you're battered with jet lag from Europe. You're battered with jet lag. And you're waking, you're battling through at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, nodding dog in the commentary box. The culture is so different.
Yeah.
It is a massive 180-degree culture shock. A lot of people hate it in the paddock. I think that's out of order. It can be frustrating. But then it's a very benign society. It's almost, this is a horrible thing to say, it's almost annoyingly polite. And that's a horrible thing to say in this day and age where people are rude and effing and blinding at you in the traffic jam and stuff like that.
and it can be, some people do not like it at all, and I think that's out of order. You know, I don't like going to some races at the moment because everything is a pain in the backside, but Japan is not one of them. Japan is not one of them. There's a combination of factors, but it's this distrust in the report.
Yeah.
What's
frustrating to me is I think that, like, there's a couple of riders who are on the fence, but I think they're not on the fence because they don't really want to decide. It's because they don't want to be the guys who are saying yes or no. I don't think Rossi, for example, is holding back because he says, well, I'm going to see what happens.
No. On the Monday after Bernard, he said, it's too big a risk for such a small game. As worse to that effect.
A small game?
It's too big a risk to go to Motegi for such a small game.
Really? But isn't every freaking round...
Yeah, no. He's not talking about accident damage by running onto turn one or running into the tar wall.
He's talking about
picking up something that is mysterious. Don't get me wrong. Do you trust the Tokyo Electric Company or whatever they're called? Because they lied to us in March, April, and they're probably going to lie now. Yeah. Are they going to stand up? Japanese people don't like standing up and going, do you know what? Fucked up, I got it wrong. Kato.
Right.
Need I say more?
Right.
Do you know what, guys? We have a massive problem. Our best rider that we have in 2003 on a works bike, movie star Honda V5. Oh, no. And it had a terrible accident. Do we know really what happened?
I think he just had a crash.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Did the throttle stick open? Did the brake disc shatter? We've heard all the rumors. I think... please write in and tell me otherwise. I think he just had a little man's crash.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
It was a terrible set of bad luck circumstances. I'm sure if you look up in the dictionary, it says accident.
Right. And now Suzuka's, forever tainted.
Why don't we go to Suzuka? Right, let's move on. Let's look into the future. Right, okay. If I was Dorna, I'd say, do you know what, guys? We ain't going to Motegi, but we're going to Suzuka. Oh, yeah, but it's not homologated. Fuck, it's homologated. They have an 8-hour race there. If you have an accident at 186 miles an hour on a blade, or 192 mile an hour on a RC212V, is it going to matter?
Exactly.
It's safe enough for the Japs to go and kill themselves on.
And they go for 15, 8 hours.
And they go for 8 hours in the dark, in boiling hot conditions and probably rain.
Yeah.
And we're going to go with a more, yes, it can rain, at least it's daylight, it's only 40 minutes, and we can fudge the schedule, Richard, or whatever. Why don't we just go to Suzuka and get done with it? Yes, it's dangerous on the hairpin coming, we go under the bridge, hairpin left, long right. The Landry crashed there, Barros crashed there in 2003, off the top of my head, two, whatever it was. Put a little chicane in, do something, fudge it. Get the effort. Carmelo needs to come together and say, this is what we're going to do, we're going to have a Japanese Grand Prix, you are coming, aren't you? Bernie Eccleston walked down the Australian Formula One grid in Adelaide in something like Jules 91. It was hissing with rain. It was like the Bible. All the drivers, I'm not driving, it's too dangerous, I'm not driving. Bernie got walked up and down the grid and he says, get in the car. Get in the car. They all got in the car, they started the Grand Prix. Prost pulled in because he said, this is crazy. It takes a man to be a coward.
Right.
It takes a man to a certain degree what's happening at the moment with some riders saying they're not going to get a Motegi. It takes a man to be a coward. He pulled in, did Alain Prost, and the race continued. After 14 laps, there was a monumental accident, and they stopped the race. But the race happened.
Yeah.
Bernie wanted that race to happen at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Australia. Where we need a bit more direction. Where's Carmelo? Have you seen him this weekend? Why hasn't he come out with a statement and said, do you know what, guys, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
It's his championship. If the race doesn't happen, that's an 18th gone out of the championship.
It's so much more than that, too. I mean, it's
you're right.
Light to the Japanese, and what was that? 75% of the grid,
Why don't we nip it in the bud? It's been going on for too long without direction. Started at Le Mans, round 4. We're now at round 12, and it's only round the corner.
Yeah.
It's October 2nd. It's sort of a month away.
Yeah.
It's 5 weeks away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we still don't know if it's going to happen or not. Here's the other irony. Race ain't sponsored. It's the Grand Prix of Japan. It's not the B-Win. It's not the Red Bull. It's not the Rizzler. It's not the whatever, Air Asia. It's an unsponsored race.
Yeah.
So there's a loss of income for the promoter of the championship, Dorna. So the irony is, they're sort of pushing for a race where they don't make much money. That's my theory. Like, why don't we just go to Suzuka? Or at worst, let's have a Saturday afternoon race at Aragon. Just get it done. Have a Saturday afternoon MotoGP race at Aragon. When we're at Aragon in the middle of September.
Two days in a row.
Yeah, we just have one double race, which is the MotoGP race on a Saturday afternoon at 4:30. I think that'd be great novelty factor.
Wow.
Think out of the box.
That is definitely out of the box.
Jules,
help me out here.
Beginning of 2009, what did we have? We had a race on a Monday night.
That's right.
The TV figures were through the roof.
Yeah.
Because who does what on a Monday night? Everybody stays at home.
Yeah.
They're knackered because they've been out camping, drinking, boozing, riding, racing, scratching all weekend. They get home, crash on a Monday night. Why don't we have freak circumstances that we had that Monday night race in Qatar? A bit difficult to do it in Europe, daytime. But otherwise, on October the 2nd, if we don't go to Japan, let's have a Save the Japan Grand Prix and let's have it at a race circuit that I've yet to think of in Europe. Or let's go to Jerez and have it. Let's go to Barcelona and have it. Just do it. And call it the Save the Japan Grand Prix. Why can't we have a race? It's not difficult. Everybody will sign up. Everybody will go. The teams will save money. Remember, budgeting to go to Japan is a lot of money. Whereas they can drive to the European race and it's a much lower output. Mechanics staying in trucks, blah, blah, blah. Just do it. Please, will somebody just say, right, this is what we're doing.
It's not like Hungary not finishing its track.
In 98, Rio didn't pay the bill. We didn't go to Rio.
Right.
I'll have to look back in the history books just to tell when they decided that they weren't going to Rio, but we went to Harama in the middle of June.
Worked out.
And they called it the Community of Madrid Grand Prix. Everybody went there, everybody had great fun. 25 points, you, go home. Bosh.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome.
Just, if we can't go to Japan for whatever reason, let's look at the next step. Nobody's mentioned that except me. Just have another race. Oh, well, we can't do this because of tradition and whatever. Fuck's sake, have a race on a Saturday afternoon and just change the schedule. The television stations, the championship, airlines, team managers, riders, had an extra race with 24 hours notice.
That's awesome.
Why can't we do it with 5 weeks notice?
Yeah.
In the middle of at the beginning of 2009 when it rained. I'm a kid from a village of 32 houses. Everything's fine. Am I giving people ideas? I need to show it. It's very frustrating.
I like it. I like the out of the box. Yeah, before we finish, your opinions of the whole CRT, because I actually heard that Colin may be going to a CRT team this year. But the whole idea of the CRT team, right now it's being based, all the negative stuff I heard, was being based on, Callio, who's not doing a great job in Moto 2 either, and one manufacturer chassis and engine combination. So are we going to have two championships like the BSB Evo, or are we going to have, do you think somebody's going to be able to be competitive, be in the top 10 on the CRT?
No, not top 10. The worst thing has happened to the CRT.
I'll have one more.
The worst thing has happened for CRT in that Mugello Monday test. It was a muck. The Super BMW Callio thing was a muck. It wasn't a million miles away.
Yeah.
In Brno. Off the top of me. It wasn't as bad as
as it was at the beginning of July by the time it got to the middle of August in Brno.
Right.
Suter is a very determined man. I know he's got, he rubbed some people up the wrong way, but Suter is an ex-racer who blew up fireworks and was a bit crazy and rolled every hire car he ever sat in.
He came on the show before. He's quite interesting character.
He is a good character. But he's built a bike that if there were another four or five races after Valencia in this year's Moto2 Championship, would win the title.
Mm.
With a rookie. With Marc Márquez. Márquez has done his standard, made a mistake in the first five races. Oh, yeah. Hang on a minute. That's how it's done. Right. The last four races, Marc Márquez, 100 points, he scored 95. Suter is a very determined man, and he... I can see why he rubs people up the wrong way, but he's going to make this work.
Well, which people is he rubbing the wrong way?
Oh, not now. Long story. No. Clutches, right. and control clutches in Moto2, and was it open to tender? Let's move on.
Okay.
But... how many people signed up for CRT? Was it like 12 teams?
Well, 6 teams. Oh, how many signed up?
Signed up and paid their 20 grand, 30 grand deposit.
Yeah.
I think it was a lot.
12, yeah. Maybe,
I mean, you know,
maybe.
€250,000.
Yeah.
It's great business, because half of them ain't going to turn up. They've got not a hope. They are dreamers.
Right.
I don't. Yeah. It's their own that they put their money down at Le Mans time, but
they're dreamers.
Comet is a great idea.
800, what was the team? Help me out, the...
Forward...
No, the beginning of the 800 era. We had...
Ilmor.
Ilmor, thank you. Yeah, Ilmor. Yeah. I mean, they were, what, 6 or 7 seconds up the pace as well?
They qualified. They qualified at the back of the grid with
Jeremy.
No, with McCoy in Estoril, and he did Valencia.
Right.
Then Jeremy and Andy Pitt did that for that Qatar race. And I had a phone call from Mario Illion on about the Wednesday afterwards. We're pulling out. I mean, I don't think it was anything to do. Yeah, I'm sure Roger Penske made a phone call and said, well, hang on a minute. I thought what my theory was. I think Kawasaki sent the big guns in.
But this time there's going to be more than one team, which means that there's there's a little competition between the CRTs. Will it become kind of like this secondary race? Like a club race that had that...
Yeah. Classes, let's get enough entries.
Let's
get some bikes on the grid.
Yeah.
Why would you... Right, you win $14 million tomorrow in the lotto. You go, right, let's have a CRT team, knowing you're going to be 12th. How can you sell that to sponsors unless you just hemorrhage money and you put jewels, this is cool, down the side?
I don't know.
You need a lot of start, you need good start money, and then where's that going to come from? Where does your start money come from in MotoGP to make sure that you're there? It's got to come from Dorna and the promoter to fill the grid.
What about
to make the show? It's a cyclical thing.
Right, so this is where the personalities of the riders start to come in, because a guy like Colin Edwards, a good developer rider, very popular with their fans. It doesn't matter where he finishes, people love him. You know, and so maybe maybe there's that angle that the TRTs can use to...
Yeah, but there's only one Colin Edwards, and...
Well, yeah.
There's only one Colin Edwards, and I have no idea how much he earns. But he's not going to be cheap.
Yeah.
He's not going to be cheap. He's not going to ride around 50 grand plus his helmet, leathers and gloves and boots, is he?
No.
He's a businessman now. But he's a businessman all along. I take that back. Yeah. Not only if you're listening, you know, he's a very clever... No manager.
That's true.
Does it?
Yeah.
Does it? So, my worry is we might see one, maybe two CRTs on the grid. At the moment.
Wow.
It's a long way to go before... The great American dream of having 6 or 7 of them when the rules were announced.
Yeah.
And I thought, great, this is fantastic. Yeah, we'll have an Evo class, we'll have a secondary class within the Grand Prix, so we can differentiate between the big guns and the CRTs. They get an extra 3 litres of fuel, they get double the engines.
Yep.
And I thought, that should work. But those in the know who are far cleverer than me,
mentioning earlier, they know more about the subject than me. Engines and prototype designed engines, they say, sorry mate, even a doggy prototype engine will whoop a CRT on half the mileage and 3 litres more fuel. That's what they say, and I have to defer to their superior knowledge.
But the whipping is not the issue. I think the issue is, like you said, how many will show up. Because if they're getting whipped by the production, by the factories, but there's like 10 of them, great. They're still fighting against each other. But if there's two, then it's immense.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still people at the back of the Moto 2 grid, and there's still people at the back of 125 grid, who you and I know are utter no-hopers. Right. But it's a business. Right,
yeah.
I outlay 10, I get a pay rider, I get two of them, I get young mechanics who are just, wow, let's travel the world, sleep in the truck, we've all been there, and we don't crash very often, and I get the start money, ding, 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 oh, I get 14 back, and it costs me 10 to do the season. If you
don't... Formula One, you've got those teams that have been doing it for years. You know, there's no hope for them to ever even score points, but they go around.
But they're there.
And they make money.
But they're there. Right? So, at a CRT team, if the money is good enough and the outlay is small enough, they can just turn up and toddle around. Dare I say it, like the end of the years of Team KR. Curtis, still that pulling. You get your start money. I mean, what a sad end. What a great era.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they got the start money.
Yeah, so true.
So there might be some teams that turn up, let's just take our competitive romantic head off. Some people that turn up to CRT just turn up and get the money. Yeah. And to the fans and to the 90% of people who don't know this stuff so deep with what we're talking about. Oh, he's in the way of the grid and the young lad and he's waving and he's got whatever written on the side of the boat. Who knows what that sponsor pays.
Right. Or a rider that was ready to retire, was not going to get a ride, and now they get to stay in the series. You like them, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Have you ever seen an Emerson electronic product? Was that a real sponsor on the side of that bike in 2001, that Cito Pons thing?
Was that really made up?
Have you ever seen an Emerson electronic?
No.
Mr. Polari, I never remember which one, put Marlboro down the side of his MSI 500 in late 80s, early 90s. Put Marlboro down the side of it. Looked pretty cool. Fluorescent orange, that great fluorescent orange that
the white. Yeah.
It's cool. And Marlboro said, well, we ain't giving you any money. And they said, well, it looks cool, and it promotes other sponsors to be on the side of my bike. He just put a sticker down the side. Wouldn't that nowadays? But it's a pretty cool thing to do. Stuck a Marlboro sticker on, even though they didn't pay.
And they got free advertising, so they're not going to complain.
A bit different nowadays because they want to keep a clean product, and any sponsor will they want to control.
Right.
But in those days, it's like
That's cool.
Garages were plastic chairs and tables.
Nice. All right, let's wrap it up. Indy. We're at Indy. We saw some interesting stuff. Ben Spies is still in the sharp end. We saw Lorenzo's doing pretty well. And of course, Casey. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, by the time people listen to this, they'll know.
Well, of course.
So, Casey will win it. I think Dammy will be there in second. And a very close third will be Ben.
Yeah?
I'm off the top of my head. Off the top of my head.
Cool.
Who do you say?
Go for it.
Who do you say?
I think Danny.
Okay.
And I would love to see Casey and Danny in a real battle. We never really have gotten to see that.
Yeah, that's true.
It would be so cool to see that. Because Danny's not the raw, rider, that fucking Bronco, like
Simicelli McRae kind of thing.
Yeah, but he's damn fast, and
stealthy fast.
He's stealthy fast, but I like that. Stealthy fast. I would love to see a battle with those two guys. Mm-hmm. Both of them actually finished the race.
because we haven't seen that.
No, we haven't had a ding-dong, have we?
One of them, you know, one of them is hurt. It'd be cool to see it. I think Danny's very driven right now and doesn't have the pressure of the championship anymore. He's just, you know,
lots of engines, lots of mileage.
Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, I'd love to see Baron on the podium.
He deserves it. I think to beat a Honda here in 2011 is.
Yeah.
You know, we have had three Yamaha victories from 11.
Right. So yeah, he has to be two Hondas though. Well, he's beaten one easily before.
You know, if Ben wins it,
him and W have had, you know, pretty even, I think, right? Pretty even.
Yeah. If Ben wins it on Sunday, it'll be proper inspiration.
Oh my God!
It'll fly off the crowd. I think it'll be great. It'll be great for business. It won't affect the championship.
Right.
The winner of the championship will still be the winner of the championship. But it'll be good for business.
Yeah.
Particularly here in America.
Yeah. I like it. All right. Well, thank you very much.
We'll probably add on after this, I suggest.
Yes.
Without telling you how to edit your own podcast. A Sunday evening quick 5-minute wrap up and see if I was right, see if I was wrong.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Speak to you then.
All right. Yeah.
And always nice to hear Toby Moody's voice, especially after we had to put up for a weekend without him on Eurosport. Steve Day, I think his name is, the guy who stood in, did a fine job with Julian Ryder and Neil Spaulding. But nice to hear Toby. And, of course, we've got Mizuno.
We got to hear him over the loudspeakers the entire weekend, so that was awesome.
Yeah. And I remember last year when he did that, there was a rumour that he got paid more for that weekend than Eurosport paid him for the entire season. I don't know if that's... Toby, over to you. But, you know, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Getting paid for talking about bikes. That would be three of my favourite things. we've got Misano MotoGP this weekend. We also have...
And incredibly interesting thing is that Wayne Rainey is going to Misano.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be emotional, isn't it?
Yeah, because this is, of course, where he crashed. He has not been back. He has not been back since 1993.
So, good for him.
Yep.
Good for him. And yeah, a strange one. If anyone hasn't seen it, it's really innocuous. Innocuous. It doesn't look like anything. It's a high speed, but he just slides along and then just doesn't get up.
Yeah, he hit the curb.
And fractured his lower back.
Yep.
Paralyzed and waist down. So we've got Nürburgring World Superbikes as well. And last weekend, we had the final BSB meeting before the showdown starts. So very quickly, those who got in, Hill, Byrne, Hopkins, Laverty, Michael, Brooks, Chiannari, Donington, Silverstone and Brands Hatcher left. And they're all within 29 points of each other.
And it is worth talking about this Michael Rutter, Josh Brooks thing.
Yeah, well, basically, Josh Brooks in race one, which there were three races at Cadwell to make up for the one that was cancelled at Alton because they had torrential rain and it was deemed unsafe. Someone had dropped some oil on there at track as well. During race one, Michael Rutter had Josh Brooks behind him. They went over the mountain. As always, Josh Brooks got a really good drive out of there. But the next corner, he stuffed it up the inside of Rutter, who would not have known he was there. Left Michael Rutter with nowhere to go but the grass, and it's one of these right-left kinks. So he went onto the grass knowing he was about to come straight back onto the track. He had no choice, put the bike down. Thankfully, didn't get collected by anybody. But Michael Rutter broke two ribs, damaged his shoulder, had difficulty in breathing on Sunday, and bank holiday weekend it was, so the next two races were on Monday. He went out for warm-up, was 4.5 seconds off the pace, started the race and had to pull in. He couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely furious. Josh Brooks was disqualified from the results of the race.
Ooh,
on
really?
Sunday. Yeah.
Wow.
He was disqualified. Now, he tweeted it was a racing incident. He was being quoted, it was a racing incident. You know, I'm very sorry for Michael, but I don't do these things deliberately. I know you lot are going to say how the, you know, the bastard Aussie's back. But interestingly, he was invited to appeal and he didn't.
Hmm.
So I think he just took his medicine. I mean,
well, like you say, he's in the showdown. Let's not create any extra. It's a smart move. It's a very smart move.
Yeah.
You know,
the cynics would say that he took, you know, one of the only two guys who could have taken his place off him in the showdown. He took him out. That's nonsense. That's, you know, for all he knew, Rotter would have gone off, come back on, carried on and kicked him off. You know, that's nonsense. And he ain't that clever. Yeah. And you can't control things like that. So that's a load of hoof. But it's just been once too often. It's a bit like the Simoncelli thing. It's cumulative.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
How many times do you have to do this before someone says, oi, mate, just, enough. Yeah. He's quick. He's a really exciting racer to watch. But sometimes, again, he gets that red mist thing. I must overtake at this corner. Anyway, on a slightly sad note, we did lose 18-year-old Ben Gautry in the Superstock 600 race, fell and was immediately hit by two following riders and unfortunately died. And greatly missed him. Ben Wilson won the Super Sport race and couldn't speak afterwards because they'd just been told. And him and Ben were in the same team.
Uh-huh.
And he was absolutely devastated. And yet again, you know, it's rider down, hit by following riders. And there is nothing we can do about that. And we could, you know, people just have to hope. But it was quite poignant after the discussion at the IMS press conference with Nicky Hayden and Colin Edwards. You know, what do you do when you're in a pack of riders and you go down? Well, in this instance, he had no chance. They were absolutely on his tail. They had no chance to avoid him, so it's a tragic, but also, you know, occasionally it's just this reminder that this sport that we love watching, yeah, it's I think it's a reminder that for both racers and for fans, part of the attraction of motorsport, you know, in all its forms, but particularly this two-wheel motorsport that we love.
It's
sticking two fingers. It's looking death in the eyes and smiling and saying, yeah, I beat you again.
Right.
And every now and again, death's going to win one. And you know, it's easy to sit here as an armchair fan and you know, say, wow, how exciting. But it is sometimes a timely reminder. So thoughts to Ben and his friends and family. And on that sad note, I'm going to have to go to work.
Okay. Well, we'll end on a happier note. I'm going to play the interview with Shalina Morita, talking about her experiences on the Harley Davidson, in the Harley Davidson race on Saturday. She also raced on Sunday. I didn't get to talk to her after that. She actually had a much better race the second time around.
It's Jules sitting out here with Shalina Morita.
Hi, Jules.
Hello. We just finished the Indy, and it's Saturday about 5 o'clock, and just finished running around on the Harleys in the track here. The XR 1200 series, which is really a lot of fun to watch and apparently to ride.
Yes, very much so.
Big bike, though.
It is a big, heavy bike, but it's a blast. I mean, you can still throw it around, even though it's big.
I noticed that this section here, T7 and T8, this is where you really have to throw it, was going slow.
Yeah.
Very slow. And it looked like the bikes were going pretty good.
Yeah, they get going really good. I mean, you ride it a little bit more like a dirt bike, in my opinion, than what you do a 600. So you're, like, it feels like you're standing up on it more like a dirt bike would, but you can throw it in the corners and everything.
Did you ever do any flat track or anything?
No, I never did.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've ever ridden a bike this style. First time I've ever been on a Harley or anything. I rode dirt bikes, but only trails.
Yeah. So, you have an interesting career, especially this year. You've done a lot of interesting things. But you only started riding those, like, what, 4 years ago?
3 years ago, yep.
And you never even swung your leg over before.
Well, I've ridden on the street before then. Started riding when I was a kid on the ranch. We rode quads, like ranch quads, learned to do wheelies on those, yeah, four-wheelers, and then got a dirt bike, and I just fell in love with two wheels and snuck home with a street bike when I turned 18, and there it began. And then 3 years ago, I did my first track day. I knew I wanted to race, so I did my first track day and got my racing license on that day. And then my third track day was a Friday practice for a race.
Which track was that at?
My very first track day was at Thunder Hill in California, and my first race was at Willow Springs, cool, Southern California. Yep.
Right. So you were the 600s.
Yep.
And then this year, you got a ride on the electric bike with the VR team at Laguna Seca, which is a really, you know, big event.
Yes.
And a big deal. What did you think of that?
That was amazing. I mean, those bikes, I wasn't sure, to be quite honest with you. I wasn't sure what to think of them at first. The electric bikes, they used to be pretty slow, and I didn't know how they would be, but they have really stepped it up. They've gotten very, very fast over the last couple of years, and, I mean, they're only a few seconds off of the 600s at this point, and they've got so much more that they can get out of those bikes. They haven't even tapped into them yet, you know? So there's just endless potential there, which makes it really exciting, and really exciting to be a part of that.
It's really, and the battery is the issue, because the motors can produce the same power.
Yeah.
What's the torque like on a CPR bike?
Everybody asks about the torque on them.
CPR or CRP?
It's CRP racing, CRP, right. But it's ECRP is the bike.
Got it.
Yeah.
CPR.
No, don't call it CPR, please. Yeah, keep that away from me at the track.
Exactly.
But that, everybody asks about the torque on them, and when you first take off, it's weird because they don't make any noise. So when you first get on the throttle, it goes, and it's very torquey in the beginning, but it wasn't torquey like I thought it would be later on. After the initial get go, then it's real like. Takes a little bit to get it going and everything else, and you don't feel like I thought you would.
Well, probably a lot of the controllers making sure that you don't burn up all your power.
Is that okay? A lot of that is, and that actually came into play in Laguna Seca. We were messing with it the entire time, and we had the power turned down so that I could get used to the bike. It was going really slow, right?
Okay.
But then they turned the power up a little bit. The more power that you have, the less battery life that you have. So it's a constant balance that you're working with. So for me, like I said, they started it real low so that I would have more time on the bike, and then they gradually turned it up until we thought that I would have burned up the entire battery in one race. And that practice day on Saturday, I would have. But then come Sunday, I had figured the bike out more, using the momentum, getting into the corners better, getting out of the corners better, not upsetting the bike at all. All that plays into how much you drain the battery, right?
Yeah.
Pull off the track, and I had a third of the battery still left.
Oh, my God.
So that means I could have had more power in the race. But it also means that I was learning the bike, and so I was happy about that.
I think that actually happened to Motorchips at Isle of Man. They finished,
really?
Michael Rutter finished the race, and I was like, oh, I still had a bunch of power.
Yeah, and it's so frustrating because you're like, oh, I could have gotten that much faster.
Yeah, yeah.
But even still, even doing that, I had still knocked off a couple more seconds off of my fastest time from the day before, and I mean, I just kept on chipping away at my times, and I was happy with that, and CRP was happy with that, so we did pretty well, actually. I got 8th place in the race.
How did the team kind of contact you? How did you get the gig?
Well, because I started racing AMA, I have to throw a big shout-out to Leslie Porterfield here.
Okay.
I'm friends with Leslie, and we've done some interviews together and whatnot, and so they had talked to her about it, and she's the one that put my name out there. She thought of me, so that's how they knew about me.
Cool.
They're from Italy, so they were contacting people over here to find a... They wanted a female racer on the bike. So, became me.
Nice.
Yeah, I was stoked.
Are you going to do anything with them in the future?
Yeah. Actually, if you haven't heard,
You going to New York?
To France.
What?
I'm flying to France next month for it.
Sweet.
Right? It's my first time to Europe. I'll get a race Le Mans.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wicked.
Big stuff. So I'm really excited.
E-Power series then?
Yeah, the FIM E-Power is over there.
Yep.
So, and we'll see. I mean, who knows what the future holds. Maybe I'll get to go to Europe again.
That's wicked.
Yeah.
Well, congrats. That's really cool.
Thank you.
What about this? Well, let's talk about this race. You had a great start that you've been telling me about.
Oh, man.
But you had a little bit
start.
Of an issue.
Yes, my visor popped off of the helmet. Not very happy about that. It happened right as I was going out to the warm-up lap, so I didn't have time to stop or put it back on or anything. It's not one that you can just pop on. So I had to ride with my visor broken and blowing wind into my face. You saw I looked like a superhero earlier from the from the dirt around my eyes. Yeah. But, you know, stuff like that happens. That's racing. I'm real frustrated about it, but what it teaches you is that you better fix that the next time, you know? You don't want any excuses right. in racing.
Yeah.
You can't have stuff like that be happening. And, you know, even with that, I feel that I did really well. I got a killer start. I stayed in front of everybody that I had passed at the start. I stayed in front of them for quite a while. I dodged a real big wreck. I don't know if you saw that.
At T2, yeah.
Yeah, turn two. Oh,
yeah.
Were you?
Yeah.
Hope you got pictures.
Oh, I did.
So I was happy to get around that cleanly and keep my wits about me. So, I hung in there, and I raced my heart out with my wind blowing in my face.
You were very popular every time you went by T6, there were people screaming.
Yeah, it was probably partially due to the bucking Bronco moves. We're still getting the suspension sorted, and these...
Actually, that's true, I saw you totally pogoing there.
I'm figuring out how to work with that. I mean, these bikes will stay upright, even if they're doing that kind
of
stuff.
Right.
I would be... 600, I wouldn't be saying the same thing. You know, if a 600's doing that, something is wrong. But on these bikes, you can ride it out, generally. So, I like it. Makes it interesting.
You really haven't swung your leg over this thing until practice on yesterday.
I've been wanting to ride one of these bikes for a while.
Yeah.
I think that the Harleys are, I mean, they look cool, they sound cool, they look like they're so much fun to ride. So I've been trying for a couple months to get on one. So I've talked to everybody that I could talk to about getting a hold of one for this race. And couldn't find anything until last Thursday. They started the test here. 2:00 California time, I got a phone call. We have a bike for you if you can get out here by tomorrow.
And you're like, I'm there.
I hopped on a plane, 10 o'clock that night. So I got out here for a couple hours for practice. At least I got to know what way the track went, and we knew that we had to change the suspension around then. So we at least had a little bit of time to get some things sorted out. But that was my first time ever on a Harley in my life.
Right. Wow.
But I love it. I mean, it's just a new challenge, you know. I love racing. I'll race an electric bike. I'll race a Harley. I'll race whatever I can. I love it.
Cool.
So I've really got to put a shout-out to Hog Racing, Harley Owners Group, Vance and Hines for getting me on this bike. I mean, it's been a killer experience. And I've also got to thank all my other sponsors because without them, I wouldn't be here. Big thanks to GoPro, Axo, they make my suits, Moto Gloss, GMB Motorsports, She's Racing, that's my brand, and that's my main sponsor. So thank you to my crew there, as well as Kegwins at the track. I mean, without them, I wouldn't get the track time that I'm getting this year, so
cool.
Thank you guys very much.
Actually, well, I have a question about the whole She's thing. You're an entrepreneur also, besides a racer, because you started this little She's thing, and it's kind of gangbusters.
Yeah, so
it's getting very popular.
So, Jules, I'm kind of a dreamer. I was the kid that always came up with these outrageous ideas, and everybody rolled their eyes. Well, racing was one of those outrageous ideas, as well as my clothing line, She's Racing. She's Racing was just a fun way to get my name out there. We do events back home. We do charity events and volunteer at like the Wine for Wheels golf tournament.
Right.
We had a alumni football game for a kid back home that was paralyzed, so we did a fundraiser for him. We do all kinds of stuff like that for hospice and whatnot. It gets my girls involved in things that I think are real good for the community. And then we do the racing events, and they get to be umbrella girls for the racers, and it's a lot of fun.
Did you bring any here?
None of the girls, no.
Yeah.
I brought some of the shirts, though. I'll wear that one tomorrow.
Cool.
And then racing, you know, was the same way. This started out for me as a dream. I always went to the AMA races and just really wanted to be out here racing with the guys and dove in and put my whole heart into something that I just really dreamed about doing, and here I am.
Now we gotta get you a Moser e-bike.
Yeah, hey, I will ride one. I told you, anything that I can race, I will race it. And I got to tell you, too, they're making a fuss about me being the first girl to race a motorcycle at Indy this weekend.
That's right.
Yeah. So talking about how this all came about and how I just learned of my Harley ride last Thursday, I also just learned on Friday as I was coming off the track that I was going to be the first girl to race Indy.
Great. And so I didn't. You've done it.
Yeah,
now you
and
are.
I didn't. I didn't get into it for that reason, but it was kind of a little bit of icing on the cake for me.
Good.
It's pretty cool.
A little history there.
Yeah. Didn't know I'd be making history this week, but lo and behold.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. What's next?
What's next? New Jersey. I had planned on doing New Jersey, and then this came about.
Right.
Thanks to Hog Racing and Vance and Hines. Big shout out to them for getting me on this thing. So I had to change some plans real quick. Instead of me driving my bike across country, I've got my mechanics driving the bike across country with another friend from back home. And so they're going to pick me up here in Indy midweek, and we're going to head over to Jersey. No
all
kidding.
All right.
Had to drop all the plans at home because it's racing.
So you're just super sport, right now?
Super sport, yeah. So in New Jersey, I'll do super sport. And then next after that will be France.
Wow.
That's the season finale.
What a year. But you're not going to Miller, though?
No, for the electric bikes?
Yeah, because it's
CTX. Well, CRP's from Italy.
They're only e-power.
E-power, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, we got one more race to go tomorrow.
Yes.
And I know you can do a killer start.
I'm going to get a great start tomorrow, and my visor is going to stay on, and I'm going to stay in front of all those guys that I was in front of for half the race today.
Awesome, man. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Well, we'll just end there. And so take care, Martin, and thanks for coming on this morning.
And you, old chap. And we will no doubt speak next week.
Yeah. All right, man.
At least two of the four of us will speak next week.
Exactly. All right. Take care, man. Good to work. Ciao.
I can't break the confidence in there.
Oh, yeah.
I can't, because you know, you think all these people, that moist air in there.
Right.
This crammed and packed and stuffy. And I really want to take any more pictures of the most exciting pieces in the
I was going to say, I mean, you can just substitute stuff from some other round, right?
Really?
Just do a little Photoshop.
Yeah.
Put them all together, you know.
Bubble head.
You're good.